This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Wrestling Network, welcome back across the pond for the 10th, yes, 10th episode of the Special Relations Podcast. And between you and me, we can't believe it either, that we've made it to double figures. But to celebrate such a momentous episode, we have pulled out all the stops to make this the best one yet. And with what we have on tap tonight, this could be our longest episode yet, which is a scary thought. Joining me tonight is... firstly, as someone who normally talks about shit wrestling shows, but tonight he's just going to talk about whatever random shit pops up in our heads. He is the host of Place to Be Nation's Chicken Salad, and he is 1/6 of the Impact Six Pack. He is Mr. Ben Luck. Ben, how are you?
Yeah, I'm really good, mate. I've had a fantastic weekend. We are recording this on Sunday, just to let everybody inside the actor's studio. And I cannot imagine a better way to spend the last few hours of my 38 years than with you guys. So, yeah, it's going to be a great time. Let's go.
Oh, thank you very much. We can't think of a better way either. Also joining us tonight, as usual, we've got the third man in the booth. First, he was petrified. But as soon as Trezeguet scored the goal against Arsenal, he knew Villa would survive. In the last 4 weeks, he's been married, he's gone on his honeymoon, he's seen Aston Villa stay in the Premier League, but this is undoubtedly going to be the highlight of that four-week period. He is the host of Senior Video on this here Place to Be Nation Wrestling Network. He's an all-round podcast legend and one mighty relieved Aston Villa supporter. He is Mr. Rory McNamara. Rory, good evening.
Good evening, yes. Comparing highlights, it would either be this or the most recent episode of Senior Video where I dragged Ben kicking and screaming through villains of the squared circle. So this had better be a highlight by comparison. Yeah, hello everybody, great to be here. Great to be here, as always.
I listened, thoroughly enjoyed the last episode of Senior Video. It's always interesting to hear how you bring positives out of whatever few positives there are out of these ones.
How being the operative word.
You still owe me, Rory. So owe me big.
Now, gents, cast your minds back about 15 years ago. Do you both remember the Kurt Angle shirt that he released that had all of his accomplishments on it that were so plentiful, the smallest shirt size you could get was a triple XL?
I do.
Yes, indeed.
Well, our guest tonight would probably need at least a 4 or a 5XL to get all of his pods and pod accomplishments on it. Almost a decade ago, he and a buddy created this network that we so gratefully call the home of our podcast. He is the tri-host of Place to Be Nation's main event. He is a co-host on the NWA Saturday Special and on the Year in Pop, and was the host of the recent Pop Goes to the Classics miniseries on James Bond. And, of course, he is the co-host of the show that started it all, the Place to Be podcast. Normally it goes by the PTBN Podfather, but for tonight, I'm going to call him the million download man, Mr. Scott Criscolo. Scott, thank you so much for coming on the show.
My mates, it is an honor and a privilege to be able to make my first overseas trip since becoming the sole purveyor of the PTB wrestling feed, the network. I've been wanting to be on with you guys for a long time. I was very happy to be able to cultivate you three fine gents that I think you would have done a great show together from our chat full of misfits and reprobates. And look at this. You're on episode 10. That's an accomplishment. Anytime any show hits double digits, you know you've done something right. And it was nice to be able to be here. And I'm very appreciative for the, I like that shirt though. See, I was going to do a tattoo. Maybe I'll do the million download man. It's kind of like Sid in 2000, the Millennium Man. Maybe I'll be the million download man. That's a not. Callum, you're getting that one. Let me write that down on the thing. Callum, call me million. All right, here we go. It's great. It's great to be here, guys. It's an honor. You guys are incredible. Both this show and your individual shows that you have now branched off from. So you guys, we may have to start talking about the, you know, I goofed with you about PTB UK when NXT UK started, and here it is. This is amazing. So I'm happy to be sitting with you, gents. And just to let you know, we don't do photo, we don't do pictures here, but you guys know my favorite Premier League team sitting right here next to me on a coaster is Newcastle.
A nice brown ale.
Popped it for my occasion. So there you go. I am ready to go. But it's good to be here. I'm very happy. This is a show that I've looked forward to for a while, so I am honored.
Well, we've been looking forward to this one. Well, I can only speak for myself, but I'm sure my co-hosts will agree with me. We've been looking forward to this one for a long time as well. So thanks for coming on, Scott. We do appreciate it.
We've had guests on before, obviously, but I think, did we put this one back in January? I want to say it was just after Christmas.
I think so. Yeah, normally we fly by the seat of our pants, and what do we actually want to what we want to cover? This is probably the best prepared we've been, because we've had about 8 months or 7 months of a head start on knowing what's going to happen.
In a rare moment of preparedness, we even chose the month that we wanted Scott to join us as well. And for us to prepare something 7 months out, yeah, just think about that for a second.
We're on average, we plan stuff less than 7 minutes in advance.
Award winning.
You know how that feels.
So we've got an absolute, an excellent show. If I don't say so myself, planned for tonight. We've got our usual just current affairs talk, shall we say, at the very start, even though there's not going to be a lot of current affairs to talk about on it. And then we'll branch off into our favourite things. And, of course, we'll visit Scott's happy place in the second half. So, moving on swiftly, it's SummerSlam season, gents. It's normally quite a busy period, and we look forward to the biggest party of the summer every year. But it's, you know, given the current circumstances we're in, it's now the biggest party in a half empty arena as it is now in Orlando. But I thought we would we've decided that between the three of us, Scott, if you will indulge us in a bit of SummerSlam chat and how we are. Sort of favourite things about SummerSlam, or favourite memories from SummerSlam's past. So, what sort of? Obviously, we're not having the usual festivities around it this year. But what's everyone's thoughts generally on SummerSlam?
I think Mr. SummerSlam has to take this one first, does he not?
Yes.
I was putting it out there, but yes, it has to be Scott that says it first.
Well, as obviously indicative by the topic that you chose to join for me to join you on, SummerSlam is my favorite WWE pay per view of all time, more than WrestleMania, mostly because when I was a kid, this was the show that I bought. That I used to host my friends, so it always meant a lot to me. And the first like five WrestleManias, of SummerSlams, are very special to me, because I always had guys over and the gang, and all the moments that took place in those first few years. It always was the one I looked. I mean, look, WrestleMania is like the one everybody looks forward to, and then after that, you've got the shows that kind of everybody jumps on, whether it's, you know, everybody loves the Rumble. There are some, you know, a few people whose favorite show is Survivor Series, and there are a few out there. But usually it's the top three is either WrestleMania, the Royal Rumble, or SummerSlam. For me, it's always been SummerSlam. I've always loved the because WWF was always at their best in the Federation era, building stories from May or June throughout the summer to culminate this big Monday night at the end of August, or Sunday, or most of them were Mondays early on. And whether it was watching Superstars or Saturday Night's Main Event, or just the, every summer for me from 88 to like 92, 93, I used to just get so pumped. I thought maybe it was some of WWF's best programming and best storyline building, even more than Mania. Because in the early days, as you guys know, Mania was usually kind of the main event. You would have the main event, you know, usually the world title match. You'd have the IC title feud, a tag title feud, one like non-title feud that was building for a long time, and then like seven or eight, you know, Dino Bravo throwaways. But SummerSlam, like 80% of SummerSlam usually was all Shakar, all matches built on story arcs that lasted from like the middle of May all the way through the summertime to SummerSlam. And I always felt early on that SummerSlam was the best booked show of the year, almost better than Mania, because I always feel like there's less fluff at SummerSlam than there has always been at WrestleMania. I've always felt that way. Now, that's not to say I love watching WrestleMania. Of course it does. Who doesn't? But remember, the Royal Rumble wasn't treated like the Royal Rumble now. We wouldn't get that until, you know, 92, 93. But early on, the Rumble was just a throwaway show. You'd get a little something, but for the most part, it was just another gimmick pay-per-view. And most of WrestleMania was kind of throwaways for guys to get checks. Not SummerSlam. I've always felt like SummerSlam was the best booked show of the year because all of the feuds culminated there. Whereas at WrestleMania, maybe four feuds, five, would culminate. And then the other eight matches would just be throwaways just to get guys together so they can get a big check and go to the hotel to party before everybody flies off to the next house show loop. I never felt that way with SummerSlam. So that's why I always felt for me that SummerSlam was always my favorite pay-per-view, because I think it was always the not only for me personally, but because it was the best booked show of the year for me, in my opinion.
I think the difference between SummerSlam and Mania in the beginning, I think you hit the nail on the head, was that SummerSlam was more well-rounded with stories because there wasn't this intense need to try and get everybody on the show. So you didn't have 19-match SummerSlams where everything went about 2.5 minutes to make sure that everyone got their payday.
I'd agree with that. Yeah, so the first SummerSlam I can remember, like you say, I started watching it was me about 92. So the first one I remember, it's going to be a bit of a Mick Foley cheap plug here, because we just done it on Chicken Salad, was 93. So that's why I said in that episode, I love 93 SummerSlam, because I was also such a big Bret Hart guy as well. So I was waiting to see Bret kick the living shit out of Jerry Lawler. As well for me, the reason I love SummerSlam so much is because it's in August, it's around my birthday. So, you know, I'm always off school when it's on. So it was always that thing of, you knew you could stay up, you knew you could watch it because you didn't have to do anything the next day.
Exactly.
No, I think that's definitely right for me as well. As I've said many times on this show, I started watching wrestling properly in 1996. And just the way it worked out, SummerSlam 96 was the very first pay-per-view I saw live. Over here at the time, we didn't get the In Your Houses. We wouldn't get them live until Revenge of the Taker the next year. I was only able to watch the encore presentation of King of the Ring 96, so it was edited, including a certain promo, so I didn't quite live that moment. But SummerSlam was the one, obviously, no school, staying up till 3 a.m., which quite the thrill for a 14-year-old, I can tell you. I remember my brother had his friends round. We all had little cards with predictions written on them. We had to have the volume on the TV down so as not to wake the parents. It's those are the moments you remember. And I should say, I tipped Vader to win the main event. And as he got the first four by count out, I marked off a check against that name. So Vader won that match, in my opinion. Okay. That was the one I needed to take to beat the four of us. That was the one I needed to win the prediction game overall. So as far as I'm concerned, it ended there. Count out. Shawn Michaels dropped onto the guardrail. Vader wins the match. End of story. Yeah, SummerSlam for me, is it my favorite pay-per-view? It's way up there for me. At its best, and I'm sure we'll get to some of our favorites in a second, it's a very big show. I mean, I've actually got SummerSlam 88 on in the background, and the irony is not lost on me that I'm trying to talk about the quality of SummerSlam when the match I've got on here at the moment is Ken Patera versus Bad News Brown. But it is just about to end. There you go. Patera has hit the post, so you know the end is coming in any match he's in this time period. There's the Ghetto Blaster. There we go. But it's just WrestleMania with the pressure off. It's not as big. It's not as all-encompassing. And I just find it, even now to this very day, I find it more enjoyable, if that's the right expression. The fact that it's always going to be at least 2 hours shorter does help matters as well. But WrestleMania just feels like a weight on your shoulders, especially now, and it's 5.5 hours at best. And you've got all the build up to it from the end of January, and rightly so. But it takes over everything. It's almost become a behemoth, and WrestleMania, the concept, is now almost more important than WrestleMania, the show, and I don't think that's how it should be. Well, as for me, SummerSlam does still stand on its own, and it probably is my favourite. If not, it's narrowly behind Royal Rumble.
I would tend to agree with you that about everything you said there. For me, I became a fan in early 2001, so my first SummerSlam was SummerSlam 2001, as it would happen to be. So you had all that felt like a big deal, because it was obviously the alliance against the WWF, and SummerSlam also just happens to have my favourite match of all time on it the year after. Not just saying this because of present company, but Shawn Michaels and Triple H from SummerSlam the year after is one of my possibly my favourite match of all time. You're almost guaranteed a banger of a match on SummerSlam as well, thinking that one there. You've got the ladder match from 2001, Brock Angle the year after, 2003, all the way through Cena Styles just a couple of years or a few years back now. SummerSlam seems to be like a WrestleMania with slightly less bells and whistles, and but you seem to get better matches because there's not so much showmanship that needs to go into it, because you've not got the pressure of it being a WrestleMania.
I don't want to sound like disrespectful when I say this, but just going back on what you just said, SummerSlam is basically like WrestleMania without the fluff, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
It's almost like the WWE's wrestling for the purists, isn't it? You know, there's no, they don't go two bells and whistle with the entrances. They don't like go too much with that. And like Callum says, they do give the big matches the room to build instead of trying to build the moment, because you know how obsessed they are with moments.
Yeah, you don't hear anything about somebody desperate for their SummerSlam moment and taking a dive off of a cell half an hour into a match that shouldn't. Lasted. That was about 32 minutes too long. just to see loads of cameras clicking. To be fair, Shane McMahon has been guilty of doing a incredibly stupid stunt at a SummerSlam as well, but it fitted with the story as opposed to being gratuitous.
Yeah, and it helped Steve Blackman as well, as you know, my favourite OAP ladies used to say.
So what are some of our favourite SummerSlams then, gentlemen?
Sorry, Scott, I'm probably clicking already. 2013 for me, because that was totally unexpected.
Yes, yes. Oh, that's a great, that's a fantastic watch, isn't it? Yes.
Yeah, not just the main events, because they're brilliant, but the whole show's great. But them two main events, I made Brock versus CM Punk my number 8 match in my GWWE, and that was not too high at all. I hate to use the Michael Coleism, but that was genuine. That was a genuine case of a big match feel. You know, you could just, you could tell like Heyman and Punk and, you know, they were the ones booking that, not Vince and the company. But yeah, I'll leave it open to everybody else. But 2013 would be my vote.
Well, when I did my happy place on the show last month, I picked SummerSlam 89 as my Desert Island pay-per-view. Listen to last month's show if you want to hear me go on about that one again. But I think SummerSlam 89 is as perfect as a WWF golden era pay-per-view can be. I mean, that anthem has just been bad-mouthing WrestleMania for the last 5 minutes. But that and WrestleMania 3... you cannot and should not ask for any more than those two shows, in my opinion. 1994 was one of the first VHSs I ever bought. I'm word perfect on the commentary on every match on that one and all the Leslie Nielsen stuff. The women were feeling randy. easy, girls. It's family entertainment. No.
Great.
2000, which I'm about to do again for Wrestling 20 Years. I'm looking forward to revisiting that one. 2002, of course, is an all-timer top 10 show for me. And just running through the years, so I don't want to gazump anybody's favourites, but has there ever been a truly bad SummerSlam? There have been some ropey ones, 2004, 2007, 2010, but I don't think they plumbed the depths that one or two manias have. I just want to throw that one out there as well.
I got to tell you, Ben, that's a great sentence, because I think a lot of people I'm going to hold off on my favorites because they may go later on in the show. So I'll hold off on my favorites. I'll give you some that I like a lot, but my favorites, I'm going to hold off till later. Okay. I think I want to answer Ben's point, though, because the whole point about a bad SummerSlam, or maybe it was Rory's point, a bad SummerSlam because maybe one match kind of reminded you of something. Or because WrestleMania, there has been some top to bottom bad WrestleManias. Mm-hmm. But SummerSlam, people may unfairly bash because of a match. Like you mentioned 2003. There's an amazing, let's be honest, 1997 through 2002, those 6 years, the WrestleManias kind of wiggle-waggle up and down, but every single SummerSlam from 1997 to 2002 was pretty damn good.
Yeah, it's a great run.
Top to bottom.
Great run.
Yeah. Top to bottom. Mm. Now move ahead to 2003 in Phoenix. 2003 has some pretty decent matches on it. I think you have another Kurt Brock, which is pretty good. But everybody wants to crap on that show because of the whole Chamber and Goldberg should have mowed through everybody and Triple H's bike shorts and all that other bullshit. You like that? It only took you 10 minutes. It only took you 15 minutes. No. But people take that moment and go, oh, SummerSlam 03 sucked. Because Triple H won the Chamber. The ending may have not been great, but I don't think the show should get bashed for that, because a lot of the undercard was really not that bad. 2004 is a weird show, and I remember when JR and I did the I posted on Twitter yesterday when I did the anniversary show, my anniversary tweets. 04 was 16 years ago yesterday. 2004 is a weird show because obviously, it has a main event that we're not allowed to talk about. And then you've got – so you have to strike that from memory. You know, anytime they mention – it's funny because when you watch the Ruthless Aggression series on the network and you talk – and they talk in the Evolution episode, they talk about Orton winning that match. You're like, Orton beat
– some guy.
To win the youngest world heavyweight champion ever. It's like you're only telling two-thirds of the story. So you're like – so – you're like, okay, we can't talk about that. And then you talk about Taker and JBL, which is really bad. I mean, it's not unwatchably garbage. It's not like King of the Ring 95. Somebody did a show about that a while back. I don't remember who, though. But that match is just so boring. And then you've got the triple threat IC match, the match with Batista, Jericho, and Edge for the IC belt. And the crowd's like doing the wave. Like, I don't know what they were drinking in Toronto that night, but the crowd was like all freaking weird. And I think people remember that show because the crowd was like kind of a mess. And Toronto is historically a pretty good crowd for shows. But like ever since then, they might have redeemed themselves at Unforgiven 06, but that Toronto crowd at SummerSlam 04 was kind of a mess. 2007 was an odd year to begin with, so I could see people looking at 07. 2010 has the same problems. I mean, 2010 wasn't a great year for WWF anyway, okay. But 2010 has the same problem that 2003 had. The show may not be awful, but everyone remembers Cena mowing through the entire Nexus in 2 minutes. And that sticks in people's heads. So I agree with that point that was made earlier that WrestleMania, there have been some bad WrestleManias top to bottom. And most recently, of course, people talk about 32, which I think is still going on. People always bash that show. It's really not that great. Yes, even the main event, which might have been a little long. I even admit that. But no one goes, God, that SummerSlam sucked. I've never heard anybody say that. Huh, till this year, maybe. Maybe next Sunday or tomorrow. I know when this is – I'm the boss. I know when this is dropping. Tomorrow. tomorrow at SummerSlam, we don't know what people will think of that show. But I can't grade shows this year. It's hard to grade shows this year because everybody's a mess. So, but I love that point that nobody historically has ever said the SummerSlam is awful. They'll say the SummerSlam was solid. That match sucked, but the show wasn't bad. But we've heard people say, my God, this WrestleMania was terrible, or my God, this Royal Rumble. Royal Rumble's kind of in the same stretch as WrestleMania as SummerSlam. Although if the Rumble match is bad, usually that kind of drags the rest of the card down. Whereas at SummerSlam, that usually doesn't happen. You can have a crappy undercard match at the Rumble. And if the Rumble itself is good, usually it can survive it in terms of popular opinion. That's just my opinion. But at SummerSlam, you may not hate the show, but you may hate a moment from that show. And I think the two biggest examples of that is 2003, when the Chamber didn't go the way anybody wanted it to, or 2010, when John Cena decided to pull his, you know, Hulk Hogan card or somebody else's and mow through the entire Nexus. that's the moments people, I think, remember. And maybe the show is not – like, what were the title matches? Maybe this is bad. Maybe it's a good point because I remember what the undercard of SummerSlam 2010 was. That's probably not a good thing.
Yeah, I've just got it on dear old Wikipedia here because I'd forgotten as well, even though I was burying the show. Probably fair enough, yeah. At least what the world title matches were. So Orton defeated Sheamus by DQ for the WWE Championship. 1855, okay. And Kane, it was during that world heavyweight run, he defeated Ray in a match I remember quite liking. I think I need to rewatch this show, actually, in all fairness. I mean, you're right, Scott. I mean, it is the Nexus match everybody remembers, especially as that one was 35-15.
Yeah,
when and you factor Cena in entrances, not, that's probably
yeah. And Cena probably did his part. Yeah, and Cena probably did his part in about 2 minutes.
Yes, indeed.
So we got 3 minutes of a match and then 2 minutes of Cena pinning them all.
The other matches were really short. You've got Dolph versus Kofi with 7:05. Melina over Alicia Fox in 5:20. And The Big Show defeating the Straight Edge Society, just to age the show, in 6:45.
The Straight Edge Society.
I think that's due a rewatch at some point.
You know, I've just realized we're like 20 minutes into a SummerSlam chat. We haven't even mentioned 92.
I think you've definitely got to rectify that, Mr. Locke. And you're going to rectify it whether you want to or not.
Whether I like it or not.
Thank you, Callum. So, I'm glad somebody appreciates it. Right here.
So, like I said earlier, it was a little bit later than my fandom actually started, so I didn't watch it live. I think it was live on Sky Sports. I might be wrong there, but I'm pretty sure it was.
It was recorded on the Saturday, and it was shown as live, although three matches were cut out, on the Monday.
Okay, fair enough. But, yeah, I mean, I still love Brett Bulldog. I know I'm in the minority on this show, I think. Well, I don't know about Scott, but in terms of the three of us, I know I'm in the minority.
I still like it. I still like it. It just doesn't hold up as well as the in-house five match, but I do still like it. It still made my list.
But it's, I mean, even if it wasn't in the UK, it's a damn good SummerSlam, because that world title match is great. I really like the Martel Shawn match, the whole no slapping thing. I like the opening tag match. If Hawk was a little bit more arsed, it might even have been better than it was. You've got to put up with nails, but you know that's fine. Same with Repo Man Crush. You can make yourself a nice drink during that, but it's still a great show, isn't it? You know, and like's already been said, every SummerSlam's like 3-4 hours long, isn't it? Nothing, even at that length, outstays its welcome. Same with the Rumble, like Scott said, because obviously until the last couple of years, you know, that men's Rumble, you had one Rumble match that was going to take the third of the show. So as long as that was good, you're happy with the rest of the show. Same with SummerSlam. SummerSlam only had to have two matches to be excellent, you know, and a couple of backups to go with it, and you were quite happy with that. Compared to, say, WrestleMania, which, you know, for 4, 5, 6 hours long, you need some Chamadol at some stage, don't you? But yeah, so yeah, 92 is great. 91, of course, is brilliant. 97, 98, 99, 2000, that whole little run is my college uni years Rumble. So that was like, they were the house party Rumbles. When back in the day, Scott, over here, sort of in the Attitude Era, wrestling went through quite a renaissance. So it was suddenly cool to like wrestling and have parties and stuff. even at like 1 o'clock on a Sunday morning, it was still acceptable.
It's awesome.
It's true. People who a year before would say to me, "Oh, you still watch wrestling? Oh, that's for little kids." Were coming up to me going, "Oh my God, did you see what Rocky did and all that?" You know, and it's just people like in lessons shouting out Rudy Poo candy ass, and I just sit at the back just to lie myself a small smirk saying, yeah, okay, I'm giving myself a last laugh on this one.
Well, yeah, you got it. I got all that reversed. So obviously when I started, you'd been through the Attitude Era peak and you're coming up for, you guys going, "Oh, you like wrestling, what do you like wrestling for?" I'm like, you used to be in school making, like, if you couldn't get out at lunchtime because it was raining, you were in there drawing posters for Monday Night Raw, a random Monday Night Raw, because you had nothing else to do. Don't give me it. But your favourite SummerSlams, 90, I think, Ben, you've named a couple of mine there. 98, you can't go wrong with that, especially because it's got the aesthetic of being in MSG. Any show that's in Madison Square Garden for me gets a nice wee tick, especially if it uses the front on entrance.
Oh yeah.
I like that aesthetic. 2000, I'm very partial. It was a Silver Vision release, if you remember, Ben and Rory, that had the strange double VHS set of SummerSlam 2000 and Rebellion 2001.
Really?
I'm sure it's something like that.
SummerSlam 2000 and Rebellion 01.
Yes.
I'm gonna have to look that up.
Okay.
You'll need to go to your good friends at CEX, Callum, and find out.
Let me just check Ben out. I'll load that up.
I love Silver Vision. Silver Vision, let me tell you something. For a guy who collected VHSs for a long time, Silver Vision saved my bacon. Because the best thing about you guys is that there was never any weird VHS thing. We couldn't dub your tapes, but we could play them. You know, obviously NTSC versus PAL was always the thing, but at least UK tapes could be played here. Cause I mean, my VHS before, obviously I went to, before I got DVDs and then before obviously we did the network, I had a ton of, I could tell you right now, most of the 1995 In Your House tapes I have are Silver Visions. Probably all of them. One, two, probably the first, all five in 1995 are Silver Visions. because it was a pain in the neck to try to find domestic versions of In Your House 1 or In Your House 2. Or
the early In Your Houses, wouldn't they be released as basically compilations with a different name in the States? Whereas we just released as the In Your Houses, as if they were taken from the pay-per-view.
You're probably right. You know why it's funny you say that? Because there's not a tape for this Tuesday, and just as a example. There's not actually a tape for this Tuesday in Texas. It's called Rampage 91. And the matches from this Tuesday, and it says it in the bottom corner, including all matches from this Tuesday in Texas.
Ah, yes.
So that's funny. But all of the, I think all five In Your House tapes, VHS tapes that I have from 1995 are all Silver Visions. And thank God, because domestically trying to find it was a pain in the ass. But the best thing about it is that your tapes overseas can be played on domestic. That was the weird thing for years and years, of course, about NTSC domestic here DVDs as compared to PAL. You know, for instance, try collecting Doctor Who DVDs. You bang your head against the friggin' wall, because that sucks. Because your guys' versions are 10 times better than ours, but I can't watch yours unless I have an all regions of the DVD player. But anyway, that's another discussion for another day. I think, but to talk about SummerSlam 92 for a minute, I contend, I'm looking at the card now. Not that I don't not remember it, but I needed to refresh my memory briefly. I've always said, always, the In Your House 5 match is better. It's just better. And I don't blame Brett for that. With all due respect, guys, I kind of blame Bulldog for that. Bulldog's carrying, and I love Bulldog, God rest his soul. Love Davey. But he was carrying way too much girth in that match for Brett to carry as much as he possibly could. You know, the match length is 25:40. Maybe if it was like maybe 17:40, we might have been okay. But pretty much by the 18-minute mark, Davey looks like he's about to puke. And Brett's doing his best the last 8 minutes. But that In Your House 5 match is amazing from beginning to end.
Love it. Fantastic match.
I also can't stand my favorite tag team of all time, the Road Warriors, having a puppet tied to a friggin' motorcycle. Don't get me started on the WWF's use of the Road Warriors. That's another bang my head against the wall. I love Savage Warrior. That match is awesome.
Great.
Awesome. Even Taker Kamala is manageably entertaining. You know, I agree 100% about Ricky and Sean. To be able to wrestle an 8-minute match without punching your opponent, that takes a lot of concentration. You know, that's not something you can shake off as anybody could do that. No, you can't. No, you can't. To try to wrestle a match without, you know, randomly punching somebody, you know, obviously feigning a punch, takes a lot of concentration. So I've always applauded Martel and Sean for that. That's not easy to do. But anyway, that's my comments on 90. I remember SummerSlam 92 very well because a few days before my grandfather had passed away, and my mom's like, you know what, maybe not invite the guys over tonight. You know, your dad's a little. It was my dad's dad, and I'm like, all right, no, that's cool. So I actually sat and watched SummerSlam 92 by myself live at on Monday evening. It's funny. You guys may not remember. I'm surprised because, remember, back then we didn't have the internet. We had the, you know, after mags or whatever, and we had Meltzer. But I'm surprised that you guys over there didn't get it live on Saturday, and we here didn't get it taped on have it taped on Monday.
Yeah, I've never thought of that, but yeah.
I would have figured you guys would have got it live because there's in 48 hours in 1992, it's not like the results would have made it to any of us by Monday night, you know?
And I always wondered that. Guys, it's not as if Sky Sports would have been showing anything else on a Saturday evening in August of 1992. Because that was when the Premier League, that was the first season of the Premier League, but then the live matches were on a Sunday and a Monday. I think the only other thing Sky Sports had then was tractor pulling, so I'm sure they could have had time in the schedule.
Seriously?
I'm barely exaggerating when I say that. So I'm sure they could have squeezed it in there somewhere. or even on Sky One or somewhere like that.
Well, yeah, because Sky One is where they had our wonderful UK Rampage 93, Rory, was live on Sky One.
Scott, quick question.
I was going to say, you've got to remember, though, we didn't get Raw at all until 1995, so I don't quite know what the Sky WWE relationship was like at that stage of the early to mid-90s.
Scott, if you can remember, when it was shown on the Monday there in the States, because I know, obviously, on the VHS, etc., it's been presented as this, but was it shown in the order where Savage Warrior ended up being the main event?
Oh, no.
Was that on other broadcasts? Because on VHS, it's like a huge picture of Savage and Warrior.
No, it is. No. When we watched it, no, Bulldog Brett was last.
Oh, okay.
Oh, no, it was. No, it was definitely last. Okay. No, the show, as I'm looking at the match list, the show live was in this order. Warrior Savage was definitely in the middle. Okay. They didn't recut it to put Savage Warrior last, because that would have been a shitty ending to a pay-per-view, to be honest with you.
Yes.
That would have been a crap. As great as the match was, that ending is kind of garbage, and you don't want to put that last. That sucks. No, Bulldog Brett was definitely last.
That was always the urban legend, wasn't it, that they moved it round so, like, the last two matches were in the dark but in the middle.
Yeah. No, I think the tape might have been – I think it was the tape that was kind of mangled around in the middle. But I think even the tape, which I do have somewhere, Bulldog Brett's last. That's always last. I think that was always established. And it was kind of – if I remember the superstars and the prime times in that summer – I feel like Brett and Bulldog was hyped as last because obviously, I was in college, so I wasn't a little kid, obviously. I remember I was talking like to my buddies and everything and thinking, I wonder if this match is going to be last just because, obviously Davey's in his hometown. Vince really wouldn't do that on pay-per-views for several years down the line, but makes sense, right? Like that one's obvious.
Oh, yeah.
Like how do you not have Bulldog and Brett last? For this, particularly with and I didn't think Bulldog was going to win because who would have thunk what Brett was going to do 2 months later in Saskatoon? No one saw that coming. I was assuming that Brett was just going to win and move on. But once we saw that, I remember watching it myself. My dad came out and he watched it with me, and I said the minute that we watched Warrior and Savage in the middle. Then I knew Bulldog was going to win. Because you're not going to put Brett Bulldog last only to have Bulldog lose. Or end in a schmoz. You weren't going to have both title matches end in schmozes. That would have been brutal. So I kind of gathered when I was watching it live that when Savage Warrior was in the middle, we kind of knew that Bulldog was going to win.
I've got the times. I've got my WWE Network open on my phone, so we talk about times and stuff. Would anybody like to hazard a guess what was what's been the longest SummerSlam?
Oh, without looking, I'm going to say 2017.
I will throw my hat in the ring for 2016.
And I'll say last year's 2019.
20. Callum is right. 2016, exactly 4 hours.
Wow!
Was that not the first one that they changed it to 4 hours and they were making?
So the first one to do that was the year before.
Was it right?
So I'm looking here. So SummerSlam 2014 with Cena, Brock, which is still the greatest squash match of all time. That is 2 hours. That is 2 hours 47, and then we jump up to 3 hours 44 for 2015. Last year was only 3 hours 25.
Oh, okay.
And speaking of 2016, speaking of bad crowds at a SummerSlam, I know Scott, you've got you were there, were you not, with the Universal title being introduced and everyone just completely crapping on it.
And I was at that show at Barclays. I don't remember feeling that long, but makes sense.
I'd also like to point out that I just want to reserve my judgment for special relations number 11, that depending on the way that the WWE Championship match goes, 2020 could be the best SummerSlam of all time.
How are you feeling about your boy's chances?
Not confident, because Randy has been on a roll. However, now I have seen something, and this is just hearsay, speculation, rumor, and innuendo, if you care, if I, if I'm allowed to steal from another.
We're better than the
inferior podcast.
Inferior, substandard podcast. That Drew might be getting it taken off of him because they would like to put it back on him in front of a crowd, which I do think it, which I do think would be an acceptable use of a defeat for him, because I think he's been shafted by the situation, as have a lot of people, like Keith Lee and
So if
that's the way they're going to do it, and it's to give him his big moment in front of a crowd, I'm all for it. If not, then keep it on him, and if Orton wins, I riot.
I want Charlotte to come back to defend her dad. I know it's not going to happen, but in my head, it's like the most perfect match. But it's not going to happen, sadly.
Oh, they can't put Charlotte and Ric Flair too close to each other, because then you'll be able to see that Charlotte's gimmick is patently a cosplay of her father. Wow.
We're big fans here. We're big fans here, Scott.
Don't let special relations alumnus Jennifer Smith hear you say that.
Ugh, oh, man. No, she knows.
Oh, she heard me say it. I was quite vocal during the Via Charlotte match at WrestleMania.
That's right. Yes, that's right. I do remember that. That's funny. What do you guys think about 2006? Can we talk about that one for a minute? That's a show that's always kind of waggled around my head, as a show that some may not like it, some may like it. I've always been a fan of it.
I like the Cena Edge match in that one. That's the one with Foley versus Flair, isn't it? With the stupid I Quit.
The I Quit, yes.
Where it's just him, just 5 months of Mick just perving over Melina, and that does detract from it a little bit. I am going to have to look up the rest of the card, I'm afraid. But
you don't need to, Mr. McNamara. I've got you covered here.
Oh, of course you have, Callum. What have we got?
Chavo Guerrero, Dominic's uncle, against Rey Mysterio, who's Dominic's not father. if you're to believe the SummerSlam the year before. you have Big Show versus Sabu in an Extreme Rules match for the ECW World Championship. Nice. You've mentioned Ric Flair and Mick Foley. In between those two matches is Randy Orton versus a nobody called Hulk Hogan.
Oh, yes. When we're trying to make Brooke into a thing. Yes.
Yeah. So, Batista versus Booker for the world title. You've got the McMahons against DX. That's the time that DX came out on the tank thing. And then you've got Edge and Cena in their matches, where they, at the start of them, having their match in each other's hometowns.
Is that the one where Vince and Shane do the classic tag team tropes during the match? Like the Doomsday Device
heart
attack and all that?
Oh, right. I forgot about that.
Yeah. Is that Batista Booker match the one where they've had the shoot fight as well in that advert?
I was just going to ask that.
I think it might be.
Yeah. 06? Yeah. I think
that rings a bell, yeah. That's like
Booker's first strike, or his first like inkling to get out the door, isn't it? At that point, it would take him another year to finally do the deed. But I think it's a SummerSlam advert.
Yeah, that's how I remember it as well.
Yep, here it's. So May 8th, 2006, in Encino, California. I think that's how you say it. I could be completely wrong.
Encino, yes. No, that's right.
Booker and Batista were in Encino, California, film a commercial for SummerSlam, which featured the match between the two. Batista hadn't been around for months as he was rehabbing his triceps and torn lat muscle, the former of which he had surgery on. When he showed up, he shook hands of the main event talent along with Fit Finlay. This was a violation of an unwritten rule of locker room etiquette, which was to shake hands with everyone upon your arrival. This only cemented in Booker's mind his feelings about Batista's superiority complex. And he just obviously one thing led to another, and he battered him.
Speaking of sneaky good shows, I mean, I'm looking here, I forgot how good SummerSlam 2008 was. What a show that is. I'm not, you know, we're talking like the couple of good matches they clause. Edge, Undertaker in the Cell is fantastic.
Yeah, that's a good.
I'm a big fan of the Batista Cena match.
Me too.
There's a Mark Henry match on there before 2011 when I don't want to puke watching it. So that's quite a good start. And you've got Glamorella. So, you know, what more do you really need for 3 hours?
Oh, you've got the whole Michaels Jericho stuff there as well.
Oh, yes. And,
the punch heard around the world. Well, she really did eat that fist as well. It was incredible.
Yeah, she did.
She took the damn thing. It was amazing.
Yep. And of course, Scott's boy joins that very, very short list of two people to actually get a good match out of Great Khali.
I just watched, you know, it's funny, guys, on the stream, was it yesterday, Friday or Thursday, was the SmackDown, one of the SmackDowns leading up to the SummerSlam, where Triple H and Khali did the whole arm wrestling on glass skit, and Khali beats the shit out of Triple H. It's actually a pretty decent segment. They were doing this whole storyline, I don't know, where Triple H was going to and Ranjan Singh is, like, you know, taunting him, and they were going to have arm wrestling on glass. Like, if you, the loser was going to have the back of his arm, and it was kind of like, you know, Tong Po and Von Damme in Kickboxer. But, right, was that one with the glass on the, or was, no, that's yes. not Kickboxer. Yeah, Kickboxer. Bloodsport's the one with Chong Li in the tournament. That's right. So I'm like, I don't remember this. They had an arm wrestling on glass? How the hell did this happen? I was like, totally did not remember that whatsoever. And that scene of Batista feud was the whole, you know, Cena always was in that feud where if he faced one of his contemporaries, they'd end up winning the tag titles. That always happened with Cena. Whenever he was building to a match with, like, a contemporary, the two of them always won the Raw tag titles. It happened with him and Shawn before WrestleMania 23. It happened with him and Cena before this match. I'm sure it's happened at least one or two other times because Cena, that always happens with Cena. But it's funny you bring up 08 because the Khali Triple H match, because that SmackDown was on the stream, I think it was Friday, and I'm like, I don't remember this. Arm wrestling on glass? How the hell did this happen? Like, I had no idea. It totally went over my head. It was crazy. But yes, that is a halfway decent match for Great Khali.
Well, there you go. John Cena has been tag champion 4 times with Batista before a SummerSlam, Shawn Michaels before Mania, The Miz before Mania, David Otunga during his feud with the Nexus.
Oh, oh my god, that's awful.
See what I mean? Oh. Every time.
Well, good knowledge there, sir. I mean, I wasn't expecting anything less than that level of knowledge, but it's well remembered there. that has been fantastic. We've talked about our favourite Summer Slams, our favourite Summer Slam moments. So I feel since I'm getting good at this, I'm going to do what we call in the industry a segue. Shall we start talking about our favourite other things, gentlemen?
Let's do it.
So, where are we going? Ben, since you are a resident Brian Pillman Respects You Booker man, what do we have on tap for our favourite things?
So we're doing our favourite things now. Okay, so for our favourite things, we thought we would do our favourite wrestling entrance. So we are talking about the whole package, the music, the reaction of the fans, what the wrestler does beforehand. So it's the whole all-round thing, basically from curtain to the ring steps, I think is the way I would describe it.
Kick us off then, Ben.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. Okay, so my pick is the man who has been in the WWE for longer than I have been watching wrestling, which is quite scary when you put it like that. I am, of course, referring to The Undertaker. WWE is very good at making entrances an event. I think he was the first guy that they did that with. It still blows my mind to think it took them over 2 years to think, as soon as that bell gongs, we should switch the lights off. That, just that one simple step just made the whole thing, just that mystique of that character just grew and grew and grew. And it's one of the few entrances where the commentators don't talk during it. They just let it go. You know, we know that Vince is in Michael Cole's ear all the time telling him what to do. This is one of those where it probably is him telling him to shut up, but it's just great. And he's got it down to such a T now where he's always to the beat of the music, isn't he? With the whole slow walk, you know, the tipping of the hat, the whole thing's just beautiful. Beautiful. You know, and that is a really odd word to use when you talk about the funeral dirge, but it's the word I'm going to go with. So yeah, my pick is definitely the Dead Man.
That's an excellent choice, Ben.
Thank you.
It's one of these ones. I think we might all probably mention entrances that have this sort of characteristic, but it's you hear the gong and you know exactly what's coming, and it's an instant reaction. It's like a Pavlovian response. It's gong, roar from the crowd, because you know you're just about to, you're there, you know what's coming next.
I remember I was at a SmackDown show over here just before Survivor Series 2004. I think I've said this story before. So our main event was Eddie versus Luther Reigns, and I still went to the show.
It's a main event anywhere in the country, Jess.
And they had an interview segment. So Undertaker was off TV at this moment. He was selling the last ride match, however they put it. So Heinrich and Heyman were doing an interview in the ring, and obviously the cameras went off, and like you just said, the gong hit and the lights went off, and I have never heard a place go mental like that before. We might talk about one other person later on where it rivals that, but that for me was the biggest pop I have ever been live for. And yeah, it was like, it was a nothing TV show appearance of that, but it wasn't even on camera, but it was just fantastic. Just, you know, nobody's eyes went off him. It was amazing. I can't even describe it. Even for 2004, it was absolutely unreal.
I've unfortunately never been lucky enough to. I've seen The Undertaker once, but it was when it was the American Badass. So he came out to the one that was after Roland. So I never got to see. I never got to see The Undertaker.
Was that you're going to pay?
It was You're Going to Pay.
Dubbed in on the network over American Badass, which is quite amusing.
Bit of bugger red.
Absolutely. So unfortunately, I will never get to see. It seems like I will never get to see, unless they do a show over here and somebody can pay him a squillion pounds, like the Saudi man did.
We haven't got the blood money over here to do that. So yeah, and like, and as you might be guessing, I am talking about Dead Man Taker. So American Badass can go jump over a fully talking Dead Man here.
Scott, have you ever been in attendance for classic Undertaker entrances?
I have indeed. I've been in attendance for many great Taker entrances and moments. I went to a ton of house shows back in the day, but probably my two. I was live at the Raw, at the end, the Go Home Raw before Rock Bottom, when Taker put Stone Cold on the cymbal. Live for that. Ooh. That was kind of awesome. That was pretty awesome. That was in my home venue, the now demolished New Haven Coliseum. Of the three Manias that I've been at and the two that had him in it, I probably watched the two coolest Taker entrances ever. WrestleMania 20 at the Garden, when he came back as the Dead Man, when Kane is standing in the ring, and for the first time in, probably 5 years, you heard Paul Bearer's voice when he did the, oh, yes, and the Garden just lost its shit. It was amazing. And then he comes out, and then he tells Kane, "You're no son of mine." So I'm glad they kept that storyline going. And then the music played, you know, the gongs and then the lights, and then out came the druids. One of the druids I knew, as a matter of fact, it's one of my PIC, Mr. Rosero's dearest friends, John Walters, was one of the druids. And then when Taker came out, you know, the Sierra Madre Taker, as we call him, with the big hat and the coat, the place, the guard, as you said, Callum, about the garden lost its mind. I mean, we were flipping out. Amazing moment. And then my other favorite Taker entrance, which I saw 9 years later at WrestleMania 29 at MetLife, was when he came out for the match with Punk. That entrance is amazing. And I got to look at that entrance dead ahead because I was opposite the ramp for my seats. So I got to see him come out and all the shadow hands wanting to touch him and kind of that was amazing. So I'm also, on a side note, I was proud to be able to be at his last win before the streak ended. Don't get me started on that. If you want a rant that pisses me off more than AEW fans, we'll talk about the ending of the streak. But that's another discussion for another day.
There's something that pisses you off more than AEW fans.
I know, right? Anti-Triple H. No, I don't even care about that anymore. No. Yeah, that entrance was amazing at MetLife. I agree 100% with Ben about Taker. He's probably my favorite, admittedly, and I'm just going to say it. I've always loved Triple H's entrance, always have. Specific ones, I loved WrestleMania 22 in Chicago when he was sitting in the Conan throne with the, you know, the bearskin outfit or whatever. I thought that was awesome. I loved WrestleMania 30 when he was sitting on the throne with the gold crown and he had the very young and unknown Alexa Bliss, Sasha Banks, and Charlotte as his, you know, female slave girls or whatever, yes. Minions. Whatever. Yes, that was fairly awesome. Admittedly, and I know this one probably pisses a lot of people off, but that's fine, whatever, I'm used to it. Is the entrance with him and Stephanie coming down on the motorcycles at the tri-bikes, whatever, at the Silver Dome. I just pulled a Hogan at the Superdome for – I thought to myself, I'm not going to do it. Damn it, I just did it. At the Superdome when the two of them fought Kurt and Ronda. Those are probably my three favorite Triple H entrances. One more, although his regular entrance is bland, most of Cena's Mania entrances I actually kind of like. I like the one in Chicago when he came down with all the guys in the Tommy guns, one of them a young Punk. And then the one in Detroit at Ford Field in 07 when he drove the Mustang in and drove through the glass. That was pretty cool. So anyway, Cena's normal entrance is pretty unexciting, but his Mania entrances are usually kind of cool.
Was it 24 where they had all the Cena clones?
Yes, because they all had he had the t-shirt that looked, or the jersey that looked like the Pillman, or the what is it, the Bengals jersey or whatever that shirt was, and they all kind of looked the same. Yeah. That was
That was the first year they had the really long runway as well, wasn't it? So it was a great visual of just the whole of the extras doing the "You Can't See Me."
I'm trying to think. What year did he have all the cheerleaders?
I can't think of
that. Damn it, I can't remember now. Ah, crap. I can't remember the one year that he had the cheerleaders. Was that 25? Was that the... the one in Houston when he fought Big Show and Edge? Was that
the marching band?
Oh, that might have been the marching band. Yeah.
The marching band's a good one.
Yeah, that is a good one. Anyway, I didn't mean to go along that path, but yeah, most of Cena's his regular like Raw entrance or whatever is nothing great, but his Mania entrances were always pretty cool. But my two favorite entrance guys are Taker and Triple H, particularly the big ones.
There's one specific Triple H entrance that I'm that I was possibly going to pick, I'm surprised you haven't mentioned it, Scott, is, again, back to Madison Square Garden.
Oh.
When he returned on Raw in 2002.
Oh, God.
That's just that was as much as he didn't do anything special, he didn't do anything that he wouldn't normally do when he would come down to the ring for a regular match. It was just the reaction of the crowd, and it was just you get caught up on it. I remember watching it. It was one of the very few that I would actually Raws I would stay up for to watch the whole thing, because I would normally, because it started at like 11 at night here, I would fall asleep halfway through. But that one was superb.
I have to say, I don't think I've ever really said this. Maybe I said it when JR and I did the O2 Rumble Vault. I don't remember, though. In terms of my favorite moments, there's a few favorite moments in Raw history for me. Not necessarily match wins, but just moments that get me very emotional. My number one Raw segment, we'll call it a segment, that actually legitimately made me cry was the night after Flair retired. When the Horseman came, and then Triple H came out, and then the Horseman came out, and everybody came in. I lost my shit. I sat on this couch and I cried. Number two was that. I was working, actually. I was in radio at the time, so I was at work, and I'm staying in the newsroom, and I knew he was coming back that night. And you got to remember, at the time, a little different than I am now, but I mean, I was beyond myself. Because as much as I loved the Invasion and I loved heel Austin and I loved the growth of a lot of the guys that came from WCW, I love the two-man power trip. I will always love the two-man power trip. And but that night at the Garden when he was back, I legitimately cried. Not going to lie. And I was more thinking – thank you, Callum, and you're right. I should have mentioned it. I was thinking more of like bombastic with props and all that kind of stuff. But yes, that entrance. I was not as it wasn't the same for me when he came back at SummerSlam 07, after he popped the other quad at New Year's Revolution and Randy Orton stood there like a deer in headlights, not knowing what the hell to do. That's another one of the greatest oh crap moments in the history of wrestling. That match at New Year's Revolution 07 when Triple H popped his other quad and Orton stood there like a dope, not knowing what the hell to do. That's one of my favorite moments. And Shawn looks at him like, asshole, do something. It's like one of my favorite moments ever. I didn't feel the same. Like, I was pumped Triple H was back when he came back at SummerSlam 07. Cause I remember being at the Garden for that Raw, and I thought he was coming out that night. I went to that. It was a Raw at the Garden, and it was also taping a Saturday Night's Main Event when they announced that Hornswoggle was Vince's bastard son. So that's a very, very memorable show for that. But, me and Rotella went fitting. I didn't get excited. Like, I mean, I was pumped that he came back at SummerSlam 07, but not the same as that night at the Garden in 02. I watched it, and that was one of two moments that year. Like, we did a segment a while back about, I think I did it, we did on Main Event, moments you regret not being at live. That, and then later that year, SummerSlam 02. That show was at Nassau Coliseum. It was in John D'Amato's backyard, 40 minutes from where I live, and I didn't go. And it still gnaws at me every day when I think of shows that I could have gone to. I mean, it's one thing to say, oh, man, I wish I was at SummerSlam 92, even though I live, you know, thousands of miles away. But for a show that was 40 minutes away that ended up having arguably one of my favorite matches ever, on top of being one of the greatest pay-per-views ever, bugs me. And I know that I could have been at the Garden for that Raw in 02. But to answer your question, to piggyback what you said, Callum, I legitimately cried when I watched that show. I know a lot of wrestling fans don't like admitting that kind of stuff, but I'm me. So, you know, I cried when he came back that night. That's how pumped I was. And then I remember getting in. it was one of my favorite moments. We're watching the, it's a side story, but we had a big group over my apartment, my roommate and I, for the Rumble that year, for the O2 Rumble in Atlanta. And Dr. G was over. And Dr. G, is for anyone who doesn't know, is a giant Steve Austin fan. He loves Stone Cold. So Austin was – they did the whole thing like in 97 where Austin was the only guy in the ring. And I said to him, I said, you know whose music's going to hit right now? And the minute we did that, I got up and I got right in his face when Triple H – oh, it was fantastic. it was great. But anyway, yeah, that O2 return at the Garden will always mean the world to me, because I was just the biggest fan of his at the time, and it was amazing, because a lot of people thought he was not going to be the same, and of course he came back so jacked he was shaped like a triangle, which was kind of problematic as you look through the rest of 2002.
What was the joke anyway. At the time? Quadruple H.
It really was, and it led to a lot of other problems for him down the line. He was definitely never the same wrestler again. I mean, he'd have some great matches after this, but that 2 or 3 year stretch where he was gacked to the gills, although once he got married, Stephanie told him to stop drinking the juice so we don't have kids with, 10 heads. And so, you could tell 04, 05, he gets a little flabby. He gets a lot of, water weight. He's still big, but you could if you look at him, if you look at Triple H at, SummerSlam 02, and then you look at him at, Backlash 04, it's two different Triple H's. The 2004 Triple H is all, he's a little saggy, and his the six-pack is gone. And I mean, he's still in decent shape, but he's not what he – because, his wife, they wanted to have kids, so it was time to turn the cycle off. But you could tell, the evolution, no pun intended, of Triple H's, body shape through, 5-6 years is mind-boggling. It really is. But anyway, that's a great moment in 02. Thank you, Callum, for mentioning that. I didn't think of that.
I've just realized I just got to that. So at 2009, sorry, WrestleMania 29, he was there for the Undertaker bit, and you were there for the Living Colors concert. Oh, Scott.
Yes, I was. Yes, I was.
I am so jealous right now.
Yes, I was.
And speaking of Adventure of Misty Live, I won't go into too much detail, but I missed going to the London 2012 opening ceremony for work. Yeah, that's my regret. There you go.
I love those Summer Olympics. You guys did a great job. That was a great summer. I enjoyed that. I love the Summer Olympics anyway, but I was actually kind of pumped when London got the Summer Games. I'm like, we're going to have a lot of Union Jack looking logos, and that's awesome. I was legitimately pumped when that happened. I like that. That was great.
We did a damn good job.
Yes, you did.
That was a special time. Mm-hmm. The summer of 2012 was a special time.
Simpler days.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, God, I miss them.
We had the thing. You still had the London Olympics hangover when Glasgow did the Commonwealth Games in 2014. So it was. We still had the. So we used a lot of that.
I'm gonna say the only thing I can remember about the 2014 Commonwealth Games is the opening ceremony, John Barrowman doing a song, and Amy McDonald joined on stage eventually by Rod Stewart for probably Rod Stewart's worst ever song. Rhythm of that isn't sailing, or Do You Think I'm Sexy, and that's Rhythm of My Heart. That is Rod. My mum always says there's two Rod Stewarts. There's Rod the Mod and there's Rod the Stupid Old Sod, and I all know what category that's on.
I love that.
I also remember Susan Boyle had one job to do, and that was to sing Mull of Kintyre, and she got the first she got the words wrong. She got the first three words wrong, which is the name of the song. She was like
a glass of water now.
And then she started singing the rest of the song. How did she forget the name of the song?
like I mentioned earlier, I've been away for this weekend with some friends, and a couple of them have been to Athens, so they were on about going to Athens and how cheap and everything is over there, and they were saying how the stadium over there, everything, all the facilities that were built are totally derelict and unused, and we were on about it between Rio and the Bird's Nest, and Beijing's empty. I think London has genuinely been the only Olympics where they've actually used the facilities of it. I don't know. Is Atlanta still up and running, Scott? I don't know if you're that familiar with down there.
What was that again? What's that?
Like the athletic stadium in Atlanta and stuff. Are they still using that stadium?
Oh, well, Turner, the main stadium, I'm not sure. Turner Field, which they used for Olympic baseball, was where the Braves played for 20 years before they moved into their new building. So yeah. Turner Field, they used, the Braves used for 20 years. The rest of the buildings, I'm not exactly sure. Probably, I think I think maybe one of the person best to ask that would probably be Chad Campbell. Chad would know the best. Yeah, Chad or those any of those Georgia guys would know. I'm pretty sure that the main stadium, like where they did track and field, I want to say Georgia State uses it now. Georgia State University uses it for football. But Turner Field's the big building, which was always meant to be temporary for the Braves. And they ended up using it for like 20 years before they built their building. And because there's no suites or anything like that. But that's a Chad Campbell question to answer.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure that the main stadium that they used for the track and stuff is being used for like one of the local colleges, like Georgia State or something. Incidentally, on a side note, it's funny what we're talking about, like Olympics that have left places. And I'm sure you guys are, you know, probably still using a decent amount of your equipment, I would think, venues and stuff. Like if you go back to like 1984 Sarajevo for the Winter Olympics, that stuff just it turned into like, you know, because obviously Yugoslavia ended up becoming a big civil war, the Serbs and the Croats and all that stuff. They used their Olympic village and all that stuff for like military training. And, you know, they used the luge for like, you know, exercises. It's actually kind of sad. It's kind of a bummer. But but a lot of places like even Sochi, which was only, what, a few years ago, is now they're all, I mean, all the buildings are toilets now, run down and broken and, you know, graffiti on them. And it sucks because a lot of these places want the money so bad for the Olympics, but then they don't know what to do with any of their stuff.
Yeah.
And that's a bummer, you know?
That was a big thing over here was like the legacy of events. So they wanted to leave legacy. So, like, I don't know if you know, but so the track and field stadium is used by West Ham. So it's a football stadium now. Mm-hmm. The swimming facilities are still that. So all the swimming events stay there, same as the velodrome. The copper box is still used for boxing. But we obviously had some of the existing places, like where the archery took place, was a cricket ground. You know, so things like that. So we actually had the stadiums in place for quite a few of the events.
Ah, gotcha. Okay. That makes sense. But like L.A., like when we had it in L.A. in 1984, everything's still used. I mean, they had a big – and the Rams played football there. USC still plays football there, so they still use that.
Yeah.
Atlanta still uses a decent amount of stuff. Again, Chad would know better than me. I do know that – well, Lake Placid, 1980, when the year the Olympic – you know, we beat the Russians. The hockey facility is used as the U.S. training center now for hockey. So – in 2002, when the Winter Olympics were in Salt Lake City, I'm pretty sure that stuff is still used. A lot of times colleges will use it, you know, like hockey facilities or whatever. But the U.S. is pretty good, and that's why I think you guys obviously are doing just as good a job. The U.S. is pretty good about still using a lot of the facilities for something, yeah. You know. But some of these European countries, like Sarajevo in 84, like Sochi, like some of these other, like Albertville, even Albertville in France, or Lillehammer in 90, like even those, that stuff kind of like just went to the shitter, you know? It sucks. It's a bummer. I don't know about Calgary in 88. I'd have to ask some of our Canadian brethren, Aaron George or somebody. But I wonder how, like Calgary in 88, I wonder if they still, well, you have the Saddle Dome, which is where the Flames, well, now they're in a new building, but yeah, there's a lot of these cities want the Olympics so bad, and then they get the quick influx of cash during those, you know, 2 weeks or whatever, and then everything just goes right in the stinker. That stinks. It's a shame. Anyway, that was an interesting tangent.
Well, Scott, you're saying that you thoroughly enjoyed the London 2012 Olympics. I don't know about Rory or Ben, but I'm thoroughly looking forward to when the World Cup is over your side of the pond.
Yeah, when is what is that?
2026. So it's still a few years away yet, but that's going to be a fun tournament.
Yeah, that will be the first 48 team tournament, I believe.
It certainly will be.
Yes.
It's going to be a good one.
Yes.
A lot of the stadia that was used for the World Cup in 94, they were pre-existing. We're just going down the rabbit hole of stadiums now, aren't we? So we might as well carry it on. They were pre-existing stadia, weren't they? Was anything, any stadiums built specifically for the World Cup? Obviously, it had places like the Silver Dome.
When we had it in 94, no. The 94 World Cup. You know what's funny? You guys will laugh at this, and I'm dead serious when I say this. I type World Cup in Wiki, and you know the first World Cup that came up? Snooker!
There you go. That's a happen.
1979 it started. 1979. The champion, Wales beat England in 1979 and 1980. And 1980 they beat Canada. Wow, England didn't even make it to the final. Wow. In 1980. Just saying.
Canada strangely have produced a good number of snooker players over the years.
They would have had Cliff Thorburn in that team, I would have thought. Yeah. Bill Werbenick as well.
So let me look. The stadium.
Flooding your snooker knowledge, Rory.
Yeah. The stadiums used in 94 at the World Cup. All the stadiums we used were all already being used, like the Rose Bowl in Pasadena.
Yeah, the final was played there.
Yeah, Stanford Stadium in San Francisco, where Stanford plays. The Silver Dome, Giant Stadium here in the Meadowlands, the old Giant Stadium. The Cotton Bowl in Dallas. Soldier Field, where the Bears play. The Citrus Bowl. Foxborough, where the old Foxborough Stadium, not Gillette, where the Pats play now, but their old building. And RFK, where the old Washington football franchise played. Nothing was built specifically –
Oh, it's
new for the cup in 94, which will always be remembered for when we beat Colombia in the I forgot what round it was.
It was in the group stage of the first round before the group stage.
What group are we in? When the kid from Colombia accidentally kicked the ball into we were in group A.
Andres Escobar was his name.
Yep, and then 2 weeks later, he was shot and killed in the street in front of a bunch of people. Mm-hmm. There's a 30 for 30 about it that's absolutely fascinating. Well, because a lot of it was about Pablo Escobar and all the drugs and all that stuff. Fascinating ESPN 30 for 30 about that.
Well, was it not because Escobar or one of the many alleged drug lords in Colombia had a lot of money on Colombia getting quite far, and then obviously that goal knocked him out, and he was the reason they lost quite a significant amount of money.
Oh yeah, yeah. And then that guy was just killed in the middle of the street.
I'm looking at the stadiums that are going to be used for the next one. I think BMO Field in Toronto is a soccer specific stadium. They're using the Mercedes-Benz in Atlanta, which is, I suppose you could say, is a soccer-specific stadium. But I think other than Seattle Century, like the Sounders play there, but everything else is an NFL stadium. So they've got, but they're going to use MetLife again. So if Scotland, the Giants are my NFL team. So if Scotland get there and we can get a wee game at MetLife, I'd love to go there. But that's a big if Scotland get there.
That's huge. I'd love that. Yeah, right now it looks like the old Big O in Montreal, which warms my heart because I love that place because I was a big Expos fan as a kid. Commonwealth Stadium in Edmonton and BMO in Toronto. Is BMO – oh, you guys know. I wonder if that's the old exhibition. No, it's probably a new place. And then the three stadiums in Mexico City. And at the moment, they are using a ton of stadiums in 2026. Probably almost all of the – yeah, it looks like almost all of the – a good hunk of NFL stadiums – so they'll be covered big time.
BMO is where Exhibition, it looks as if it was where Exhibition Stadium was. I think Exhibition Stadium was knocked down and BMO was built on there.
Oh, okay, so, right at it. Okay.
Yeah, so BMO Field has actually been the that's where the big event was held.
That's right.
To bring it back to
Yeah, no, yeah.
About the wrestling,
look at you, topic. I am impressed.
Oh, well done. Wrestling.
There you go.
Oh, yeah, I know, wrestling.
I am impressed. I'm writing
Place
that down.
Place to Be Nation, everything under the sun feed is what we're on just now.
Callum did a good segue. All right, there we go. Good, good.
Excellent.
Good test.
So back on to... If we move over to Rory for your, I think we were talking about favourite entrances.
In the previous life, we were, yes. I enjoyed that tangent anyway. It's what we're here for. So I am going to keep this one brief. But it is, I am going to say something positive. But the second thing today we've had positive to say about Mr. Ultimate Warrior, his entrance in general. And you talk, Ben, about the greatest squash in wrestling history. You incorrectly say it was at SummerSlam 2014. It was, of course, at SummerSlam 88, which I'm watching here in the background. I think we've heard that music before, said Gorilla, and he was right. What else do you want from somebody from parts unknown? His music is two chords. He is some sort of alien. I'm not going to descend to the depths that another already mentioned inferior podcast will try and tell us that it is a Native American gimmick. I'm not going into that one again because it's wrong. He is supposedly a spacey alien beamed in from a spaceship. Parts unknown. He runs to the ring, he shakes the ropes, and he wins matches in 30 seconds like this one. Ultimate Warrior's entrance. It's probably the best thing anybody can really say about him these days, although he is Mr. Pay-Per-View in many other ways. Has he ever had a bad pay-per-view match apart from WrestleMania 4? I think not. A specific example where he didn't do that, and one where somebody actually tried to imitate him. Not the Renegade. I'm not going down that rabbit hole either. But WrestleMania 7, of course, that very important match where he walked to the ring. Am I right in saying he actually did run to the ring at SummerSlam 92 as well?
Yes.
But he probably had to travel 5 miles from tunnel two tunnel to ring. He really is a spaceman after all.
I think he was quite happy he was going on first.
Yes, indeed. And just one I want to mention here, which had nothing to do with him, although some might say WrestleMania 8, it had something to do with this other person. Of course, when he returned at WrestleMania 8, many people thinking it was Kerry Von Erich. But I just want to jump back, or jump ahead, depending on how you view time travel, to Royal Rumble 92, when the buzzer hits, and it is the Texas Tornado who is the next man in. For some inexplicable reason, he comes through the curtain by raising his arms to the roof. And I swear, that crowd there in the Knickerbocker Arena, they swear that it is Ultimate Warrior. When they realize that it's just poor old Kerry Von Erich, the pop dies away there very, very quickly. Go back and watch it and tell me I'm wrong. But so yeah, the Warrior entrance is my pick here because the guy's a fucking lunatic.
No, again, and that's just what we were talking about earlier on as well. As soon as you hear the first strum of that guitar, you know exactly who's coming out, like,
and
the Undertaker.
You're away.
I shall close this up again with another Pavlovian response entrance. I am picking You'll Never Forget. Here we go, hint here. You'll never forget the entrance of Goldust.
Sorry, JT does it much better than I do.
You guys are fantastic. Well done.
It's one of these ones I think I've listened to, and again, to talk about that inferior podcast, but there was just a 5-hour podcast I listened to where Bruce Pritchard talked through Goldust. A 5-hour podcast, never catch on. but they were talking about the entrance. It was so different. And if you think about 1995, where you hear, you've got T.L. Hopper and his entrance is toilets flushing, or you've got IRS and it's just a typewriter. To see this thing, and it changes what your screen looks like. Like, it's you're at the cinema, and Shattered Dreams Productions comes on, and you get this guy who's dressed like the Oscar statue coming out and taking his wig off and just being all around Goldust. It's just, it's fantastic. And all of the many, many returns he's had, like Royal Rumbles and whatnot, you hear that. I don't even know what you would call that first noise, but you know who's coming out, and it gets a reaction every single time. And I think it would still, to this day, despite him being away to pastures new. But I think it's just one of these ones that you've got the whole package. He never did anything. He never had the need or the chance to do these big elaborate Mania entrances, probably because his entrance all the time was big and elaborate, and it was excellent.
I always loved at the time, especially when they really got the handle on his character, when he would come down to the ring late 95 and through 96, they would actually switch to the letterbox effect.
Yes.
On yep. the screen. I just thought, just great little touch like that. I just love things like that. That's real great attention to detail, isn't it?
So I'll just want to say a couple of honourable mentions, and I'll keep it brief as I can, because they're all in the same category, which is the hometown hero pop. So the three I'm thinking of is Austin versus Rock at WrestleMania 17. That is insane. Punk at Money in the Bank 2011. That crowd is just unreal.
Ridiculous.
Absolutely unreal. And for me, the greatest entrance and the greatest pop, just A, because of the way they prolonged it and like built it up, the Hart Foundation at Canadian Stampede.
Oh my God.
Absolute
yes.
poetry.
Oh, excellent choice.
The building, not the crowd, the building is ready to explode.
When you
fucking Brett Siren hits there, that's maniacal in the best possible way.
When you can see the hard camera actually shaking.
And that's not an effect, and that's not someone shaking the camera. It's the building is about to fall down.
But they got the order spot on, didn't they? You know, Pillman first, then the Anvil, then Bulldog, then Owen, then Brett. So they got it all down to a T. Pillman with that shit-eating grin as he's walking out is probably my favourite Pillman memory, just off the top of my head. It's the thing I always remember about him.
That pop from when Brett emerges, the crowd don't quiet it down from that until the show goes off the air. Yep. And probably pretty not much. Even then.
And on a coin flip for that, the heel heat that Steve's getting he's eating that shit up. He is loving that at that moment, loving it. That match. Where did I put that in my list? Did I put that in my top 20? I gotta remember.
I was the high vote on that one. I think
you were. You were. I was. I know. I was about mid 20s. I think I was like 25.
Where did I put that? I might have been, I think I was maybe 30s, or if I remember correctly, I could have been in the 60s, because my 60s
was
quite...
You're roaring 60s.
My roaring 60s, yeah, my 60s was incredible.
I'm going to embarrass myself, because I know I probably had it lower than I wanted to.
Is this going to be another AJ Styles, SD Jones moment here, Scott?
Yes! I'll be back in an hour! Yeah, I'll have to look it up. I know it's somewhere. Obviously, I had it. I just can't remember where. But, the heat for that match. Speaking of Calgary, that building. That match is just amazing. But Brett's pop is amazing. But I think we can't discount the heel heat of Shamrock and Steve and the Road Warrior. I mean, they were just – and speaking of Goldust – yeah, I mean, they could have got shanked. Yeah. I mean, that's how hot that crowd was. It was amazing.
And the scary thing was, if it wasn't for injuries and politics, you know, Sid and Sean would have been there. That was like almost a B-team American team, wasn't it?
Yes.
If Sean had made it, even at that point, if Sean had made it into the building alive, he would have done well.
could you, I mean, it's like the ECW... one night stand guy, if Cena wins, we riot. If Austin had won that night, that's a riot waiting to happen.
That's another crowd, isn't it? The RVD crowd.
Oh, at One Night Stand 06?
Yes. Yes. And yes, I only just watched One Night Stand 05 as well, so everybody's entrance just that night was unreal. So obviously, like, Sandman obviously was the highlight, but yeah. The 06 as well for RVD. Fantastic.
I've seen his entrance in 06 as well. It's just yeah. he's like behind enemy lines.
Goes in, keeps his head down. Yeah, he played that so well.
I think that was the first time where I thought, this Cena kid, he's got a future. It's not just them bullying him up. There's something about him that's going to keep him going.
a couple honorable mentions from me, if you will, just quickly before we wrap it up. Entrance music. I thought we were doing so. I would have chosen any Evolution entrance because that entrance music is absolutely superb. I do listen to it sometimes. When I'm in the house myself, I'll put that on. I'll just walk about as if I'm walking down the ramp with the four of them, because it's just it's an excellent piece of music. And Voodoo Child. When Hulk Hogan came back with Voodoo Child, or even when he had it with WCW, is an excellent. I think it goes really well with him. But that's an excellent entrance music. It's the worst dub. When they take that out, it's the worst dub ever on the network, and it offends me more than when they put Jericho's Break the Walls Down on his WCW stuff.
Yeah, that's awful. That's awful. Evolution is my favorite entrance theme of all time. End of story. I don't have to say anymore. I'll leave it at that. Greatest entrance theme of all time.
Simply Ravishing from Rick Rude for me.
Oh, yeah. All right, so Evolution is my favorite WWE entrance theme of all time. Roots theme. And when did Rude ever have a bad one? I mean, he had Sade Smooth Operator in World Class in AWA, so he never had a bad theme.
That was a good chat there, guys. Good talk. So I think we should, for our listeners' sake, I think we should have a break at this point, and we can get some refreshments before we go again in the second half. What a second half we've got coming up for you as well. It's going to be, I think you'll enjoy it. I've certainly enjoyed research part of it, so there's been a bit of research put into it, and then of course we've got Scott's happy place which we'll visit, and no doubt it will be there'll be some excellent discussion on that one as well. So as always, and as Desmond said in Lost, we'll see you on the other side. Nation, welcome back to the second half of the Special Relations special, episode number 10. We hope you enjoyed the first half. We certainly did. It was an absolute blast to do. I would stop short at guarantee, but I would guarantee that our second half is going to be just as good, if not better. But before we go into that and start talking at length of what we've got on tap, just want to run through some of the things that we've got currently on the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Network. And yes, I am feeling severely under pressure about doing this because the boss man is in the house. On the newest PTB NXT, Jenny, Jake and Tim walk through the May 2014 episodes of NXT and more crazy gimmick names. On the newest NWA Saturday special, Scott and the Doctor discuss the big news on the NWA's new partnership and then take a few mailbag questions and, yes, another Scott rant. On the newest episode of Main Event, Scott, Nate and Steve dive into their mailbags and answer your questions. Our great and loyal listeners ask about dream matches and AEW fans. Guess who that question was directed at? Answers on a postcard. On the newest drive through the highway to the Impact Zone, Logan and the guys look at the fourth episode of Impact and weekly pay-per-view number 101. Drew Wardlaw has a special guest on the newest You Don't Know Billy Jack, his wife. Mr. and Mrs. Wardlaw take a look at the famous barbed wire ECW title match between Sabu and Terry Funk. That's an interesting one to watch with the missus. Rory, I'd put that one down for the second honeymoon.
She's all a very, very brief exposure to ECW was quite enough for her. She's quite, I wouldn't call her a delicate flower, but ECW, I'm going to have to hold back on that one for a while, I think. So, well played, Mr. Wardlaw, going right in there with the fucking barbed wire, Terry.
I know.
Must be built on very strong foundations, that relationship.
Nothing quite says I love you like barbed wire.
Also, please check out the Place the Nation pop feed with some great shows that include The Year in Pop, Laugh in Theatre, The Great Debate, The Glenn Butler Podcast, Our Spectacular, Diamond Conversations, It Was a Thing on TV, A Piece of the Action, Blockbuster Rewind, and so much more. So please subscribe today. And whilst you're at it, subscribe to a pair of tremendous podcast feeds. First, that is Jennifer Smith's The Jenny Position, which is now the home of Geek and Sassy, Talking Pop, Freak Out Drive-In, the Brother-Sister Rewatch Podcast, The Journey Through Infinity, and more. And also check out the North-South Connection Podcast Network, brought to you by JT Rizzero, Chad Campbell, and Aaron George. It is the official home of Wrestling Warzone, No Holds Barred, The Extreme Three-Way Dance, Jeff Lynch Wrestling, The Ruthless, oh dear, every single time, The Ruthlessly Aggressive Podcast, TNA Never Dies, and more. We have officially kicked off our 2020 stretch project, determining the greatest WCW match ever. You have until New Year's Eve to do your research, promote matches, and build your list. Conversation and rules can be found at facebook.com/GWCW matches or on the Pro Wrestling Only message board. On our social media pages, the greatest song from a movie tournament has kicked off, so be sure to vote for your favourites every day, which we shall be doing in a couple of minutes, gents, if that's okay with you. Be sure to check out placemination.com each and every day. We have new voices and fresh takes bringing you articles on topics in the worlds of wrestling, sports and pop culture, including Trent's SmackDown and Fox report, This Week in WWE by John Crowe, Polly's Perspective, Ben's Unpopular Opinion and Matt's Disney Live Action Journey. And if you're doing online shopping at Amazon, please be sure to click in the banner on the right-hand side of the Place to Be Nation homepage or use www.placetobenation.com/Amazon. And that will take you right to Amazon and helps out PTBN at no cost to you. So hopefully, was that read up to scratch there, boss? I hope I didn't disappoint you too much there.
You did an exceptional job. Well done, Callum. Yes, all those shows are awesome. This show is awesome. The other shows these guys do are awesome. As a matter of fact, Callum, your second episode – well, actually, by the time this airs, it'll already be up. So the second episode of NWA Croc and Roll will be on the feed by the time everybody listens to this episode. So check that out. You, Callum, the Doctor, and, of course, Sean Kidd, May 85 TV. So I'm looking – and who'd you have on that episode? Oh, yeah, the Sue's on, right?
We did, yes. We had Matt Souza on that one. That was a very good one to record. Yeah.
Great, great. And of course, your guy shows, of course, Ben with his exceptional chicken salad show. I'm looking forward, Ben. You're 3 for 3 in terms of show picks. I'm very impressed
so
far.
Thank you. I'll plug it again properly at the end of the show, but we're doing Full Brawl 99 for the next one.
Oh, okay. That's a good one. Right. That's a good one. Well, that's a good one to review, not a good one to watch.
I think that's why Sean picked it.
Oh, and of course, Rory, senior video, tremendous show, love it a lot. I've loved all of your picks so far. I'm looking forward to when I will come on.
Oh yes,
because I know that I will. No, I'm just kidding. I would never do that. One thing I don't do is stiff arm my talent.
You
were
right,
please.
First time, Scott.
Yeah, please. I don't do that. No. I have some personal picks of my favorite Coliseum home videos that I would love to help you on talk about.
More
so.
Than welcome.
There's some good ones. Boopers. Oh God, what's the one that? Well, you did that one. The one with the Brett Wynn. There's a bunch of other ones. The early Roddy Piper one is good.
I'd like to do that one soon.
Yeah, there's the Piper one. One of the early IC title ones is really good, too. So anyway, check these guys. Everyone have fantastic shows besides this one. Of course, Callum is part of Croc and Roll. Ben does Wrestling's Chicken Salad. And, of course, Rory does Senior Video. So there's the boss giving you the thumbs up. That was tremendous. All those shows are great. Please check them out here on the Place to Be Wrestling Network. So. I don't do that as well when I'm a host. So that was pretty good. I'm impressed. I'm impressed with myself.
Thank you very much. I don't know about you guys, but I'm slightly embarrassed here with all the kind words that have been said.
My head's not going to be able to fit through the door soon. I tell you.
I know. I think I'm going to need to sleep in the dining room tonight because I'm not going to get through to the bedroom. So just before we move on, we do have the greatest song from a movie tournament ongoing just now. I believe there is, at this point in time, we're in round two, so there's six matchups going up every day. At least six at this point in time. Mm-hmm. Yep. So we've got six brand new ones posted just a couple of hours ago on the page. If you follow PTBN tournaments or the Greatest Song Movie Tournament, you'll get all the matchups in there if you haven't already done so. And if you haven't, come on, why not? So we shall cast the official, as we do every month, the official special relations votes today. Now, Scott, you are possibly going to provide us with different insight than we normally have, because if you've listened to previous ones, we'll just go, okay, don't know that one, we'll vote for the one that we do know. So it's good we've got the boss on here to help us along with that. So the first matchup today is Endless Love by Diana Ross and Lionel Richie from Endless Love versus Dust in the Wind by Kansas from Old School.
You're my boy, Blue. You're my boy. Sorry.
Okay. Are you okay there, Ben?
Yeah.
I would be inclined to go with Endless Love on this one. I don't know,
my pick also. Yep, me too.
I absolutely hate that song, so I'm taking Kansas Dust in the Wind.
Yeah,
better movie too.
Yet again, You're My Boy Blue. You're My Boy Blue. It's a 2-2 draw.
Well, for wanting of after those kind words, if Scott hates it, I don't think we can vote for Endless Love. So Dust in the Wind gets the vote this time. Next one. White Christmas by Bing Crosby from Holiday Inn versus Everybody, open bracket, Backstreet's Back, close bracket, by the Backstreet Boys from This Is the End. I'm going to have to vote the Backstreet Boys.
Of course you are.
Yeah, that was obvious. White Christmas for me. Bring a bit of sanity back to this.
Yeah, a bit of Bing for me as well.
White Christmas is the greatest Christmas song of all time, so I have to go with that.
I only voted for Backstreet Boys because I knew it was going to be a whitewash for White Christmas otherwise. Next up is The Rose by Bette Midler from The Rose, or All Star by Smash Mouth from Shrek.
Ooh, that's a tough one.
The Rose, I detest, but it is responsible for what I think is probably the greatest cover version of all time, Mudhoney's version of The Rose. They managed to twist that wheezing, knackered old dog of a song into something really quite spectacular. But this is Bette Midler's version we're talking about, so it's Smash Mouth by default, I'm afraid.
Somebody once told me the world is gonna... Sorry, yeah, Smash Mouth.
I love, and I'm not the biggest Bette Midler fan, but I do love The Rose, but I'm going to go with Smash Mouth on this one.
That's 4-0 to Shrek there. And I was also a bit scared. I thought we were going to have a bit of a lawsuit on our hands because I thought Rory was calling Bette Midler a knackered old dog.
No, only the song. I know.
It's like, oh.
If you're listening.
Next up. Damn, It Feels Good to Be a Gangster by the Ghetto Boys from Office Space versus You'll Be in My Heart by Phil Collins from Tarzan. That's a toss-up for me.
I love the Ghetto Boys, but the Tarzan song fits the movie, so I got to go with that.
Yeah, hometown boy, Phil Collins votes.
I went for the Ghetto Boys, but I'm not a massive lover of it or anything. So that's one of those. It's just waiting to get knocked out by something bigger in the next round, isn't it?
I'll plop for a 3-1 there, so I don't bring it because I don't have a dog in the fight in that one. So I'll just be. We can go with it. Next up, Back in Time by Huey Lewis and the News from Back to the Future, or Hip to be Square by Huey Lewis and the News from American Psycho.
Oh, wow.
Is this our first artist versus artist match?
I was going to say, I think I'm going to go for Huey Lewis and the News here.
I don't think it's the first one. I think this maybe is like the third, or maybe it's like the third.
Okay.
Yeah, second or third. I'm going to go with Back in Time because I think it's the – I had a debate with somebody. Actually, I had a debate with my co-host from the James Bond series, my buddy Tech, about what's a better Huey Lewis song from that movie. And I've got, I know everybody loves The Power of Love, but I love Back in Time. That's a great movie, a great song.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go with Back in Time.
Yeah, I went Back in Time.
And we used it on Year in Pop, so –
I'll go Back in Time as well because I've watched American Psycho and I don't get it. Like, it's such a strange film.
There's only one song you need to remember from American Psycho, which is, of course, The Studio. So anything else sort of turns into white noise after that.
I'd have gone Hip to be Square, but then I am, so.
So next up, La Bamba from La Bamba, or Oh Yeah from Ferris Bueller's Day Off. I'm not sure. I'm inclined to go La Bamba.
Yeah, I'd go La Bamba too. Mod Lost Lotus.
I went Oh Yeah. So, I get that's another one of those sort of pick 'em ones for me. Both like 6 out of 10 songs for, in my opinion.
I'm only going for La Bamba because I think Ferris Bueller's Day Off's got a superior song in it elsewhere.
Yes, I know, yes.
So I think we should, for the terms of voting, I think we should shake it up, baby. There you go. Up next is Into the Groove by Madonna from Desperately Seeking Susan versus Rubber Band Man, The Spinners from Avengers Infinity War.
Oh. Well, I think Into the Groove is one of Madonna's best songs, so I'm going to go with that.
I'd go with that too, although Desperately Seeking Susan is a fucking dreadful film.
Oh yeah, it's a terrible film. I won't even deny that.
Yeah, I
would go Madonna as well.
Madonna. But Into the Groove is a terrible movie. Yes.
And finally, Get Out of My Dreams, Get Into My Car by Billy Ocean from License to Drive versus Flashdance, What a Feeling by Irene Cara from Flashdance. For me, I think it would just need to be Flashdance.
It's a great song.
We're talking iconic again, aren't we? Yeah. Gotta be Flashdance.
Yeah, I think so.
I agree.
Excellent. Who
knew a welder could be that good at dancing, though?
Well, excellent. We have done our civic duty there, gentlemen. We have, for this nation, we have done our, used our diplomatic rights and cast our votes. So, excellent stuff there. So, whilst we are on a music theme, I shall transfer over to Ben, who has come up with a positively spiffing idea of what we're going to do for our next segment. So, Ben, do you care to enlighten us?
So, when we asked Scott to be on the show, there were sort of two things we know. So, the reason why we got on for August was because of SummerSlam, but we know Scott loves British culture. He loves James Bond. He's obviously done the pod for their pop feed. And we know he loves his British music. So what we decided to do was come up with our greatest British supergroup. So the rules were you could have up to 5 members in your band, but you could only pick one person from any individual band. So, for example, you couldn't have Mick Jagger and Keith Richards in the band. We might go off on a tangent again. Hopefully we will. And I hope you enjoy it.
Undoubtedly we will.
So shall we let our guest go first?
I was just about to propose that, Ben. I think that's a wonderful idea.
Yes, Mr. Criscolo.
I have been, as much as I love talking SummerSlam with anybody any day, this has been the most looked forward to thing I've wanted to do since we discussed the format and you showed it to me. I wanted to do this for a long time. And the harder part about this for me was not even making it the rule. It was kind of like we do for our like pay-per-view ballots. We could only have one member per band, because then I looked and went, oh, crap. I had two from one band in my first draft. And I went, oh, shit. So I took the instrument that had the wider swath of choices and switched out him for somebody else. So I have five guys in my band. I will start from my – I will do my keyboardist. Then I'll do my drummer, then my bass player, my lead guitarist, and finally my lead singer. The lead singer was the easiest, believe it or not. As much as there are an amazing amount of them, my lead singer was the easiest, because I will always love this guy's voice forever, but I'll do him last. All right. My keyboardist was a tough one, because the two guys I couldn't use – I didn't want to cheat. Because technically, John Paul Jones is the bass player, even though he does play a ton of keyboard on a ton of tremendous Led Zeppelin songs. He's technically the bass player, so I'm not going to cheat and put him as a keyboardist, even though he did play a ton of keyboards on plenty of Zeppelin songs. So I have a tie. It's kind of like dueling drummers in the Allman Brothers. I have two keyboardists that I could rotate. This is my only rule bend. I took Rick Wakeman from Yes. I'm a decent fan of prog rock, and I have to be in the mood for Yes, because a lot of their stuff is very melodic and kind of goes off a different path. But I love Rick Wakeman's keyboarding abilities, and he's told some great stories through his keys. And then the other guy for more of a pop sensibility is Tony Banks. From Genesis. Yes. I love Tony Banks. I mean, I love all three guys, but I can't use Phil and I can't use Mike. So my favorite, and I'll probably cheat and keep giving you my favorites when I talk about these guys. My favorite Genesis album is Abacab. And the Tony Banks work on that album, because that's just as they were. I mean, they've always been proggy, even when they had Peter Gabriel. But this is when they kind of – I've always loved Abacab, because I feel like it transferred from prog to solid pop and rock. And I think Tony doing that was a key component in that. So my keyboardists are a tie, and they can rotate based on the kind of song. Rick Wakeman from Yes and Tony Banks from Genesis. My drummer, when I did my original draft, my drummer and my lead guitarist were in the same band, so I had to cheat. I didn't want to cheat, so I chose to keep him as a drummer, because there are less drummers than there are lead guitarists. So I kept, of course, how do I not put the great John Bonham behind the Skins? Bonzo is the greatest drummer that ever lived. I do not want to disrespect Keith Moon. Although Keith did get a little sloppy at the tail end of his career, because, well, he was, God rest his soul. But, let me ask you guys a question before I go any further, because I didn't use anybody in this band, but do we count Fleetwood Mac as a British band, or are they like a hybrid because we're half and half?
I would very much accept any Fleetwood Mac member.
Yeah, I would have said so.
Any Fleetwood Mac version one member in this band, yeah, that'd be fine.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Well, because I did think of putting Mick here as my drummer. I didn't, yeah. By the way, rest in peace, Peter Green. He just passed away earlier this year. The true, you know, leader of, or the original leader of Fleetwood Mac. So I have Bonzo as my drummer, because it's Bonzo. My bass player was just as easy as my lead singer. I love this guy. I love this band. I've seen them 3 times. He's another one that is sadly no longer with us. But on my bass, I had to go with the Ox, John Entwistle.
Excellent choice.
He was so stoic. And I did see, I've seen The Who 3 times in 3 different decades. I saw them in 96. I saw them in 2004. And I saw them in 2000. I saw them with D'Amato at the Garden. They were all the shows were at Madison Square Garden. 96, I saw with Dr. G. 2004, I saw with another friend of mine. And I saw them in 2000. Was it 2016? I think it was 16. I saw them with actually, I saw them with D'Amato. Of course, sadly, the last two I didn't see with John because the 2004 concert was that tour when he passed away right at the beginning of it. But I did see him in 96. He's awesome. He's one of the greatest bassists, if not the greatest bass player ever. I mean, non-British, you could talk about, Geddy Lee and a ton of other tremendous bass players. Obviously, John Paul Jones. Obviously, Paul McCartney. To me, John Entwistle epitomized that low bass line that kind of kept the foundation of every loud Who song, because most of it's Pete's crashing guitar or, Roger's vocals. But I had to go with the Ox at the bass because he was just such a stable sound as the foundation for almost every Who song. So he's my bass player. At lead guitarist, this is where I got a little tricky because my original person I had on here was obviously Jimmy Page. But I couldn't put Jimmy because I had Bonzo and I wanted to keep Bonzo. Sorry, Jimmy, but I yanked Jimmy off. And the pool of guitarists is ridiculous. But I'm going to go with – I feel I'm obligated to at least pick one guy from this band. So I did. So he might not totally fit with these other guys, but maybe he will because I think he was always that good. And I always thought he was a guy that didn't get the respect he truly deserved in this band. My lead guitarist, George Harrison. I don't think he gets the respect he deserves. I think it's always Paul, John and Paul, John and Paul, John and Paul. And I love John and Paul. But George, I love Something. Something's probably one of my 5 favorite Beatles songs. And then all of his solo stuff, My Sweet Lord, all the stuff he did in Bangladesh, like all that stuff in the early 70s, just amazing stuff. And then the stuff he did in the early 80s. The other guy that I was thinking of, and I may blow your minds when I say this, because I think he's another guy that deserves a lot of credit for being an amazing guitarist. No, I didn't think Eric Clapton. I did think of Eric Clapton, but I'm like, he would overtake this band. He might be too much. I need a balance. You can't have a guy whose nickname in your neck of the woods is God. But Clapton's ridiculous. We know that. The other guy that I almost put in here was Dave Davies. I love the Kinks, and Dave Davies is a hell of a guitarist. The other guy I thought of was Noel Gallagher, but I didn't want any fights. So I wanted everybody to be nice to each other in my band, and I love Noel to death, but he's a bit of a dick, like his brother is. But I mean, we love Oasis, but George Harrison's one of those guys who his playing is so steady and solid, and I think he would fit well in my 5-piece. Yes, I would have killed. Thinking about it, sure, it would have been easy to slide Clapton in there. I'm sure you guys thought about it as well, because Clapton is God. But I thought that he might have overtaken this, and I do love his voice. I almost put him as my lead singer, almost, because I do like Clapton's voice. But I thought I couldn't put Jimmy Page. Let me think. I'm like, you know what? If I don't put somebody from this band, I might get flogged. So I took George Harrison, and my lead singer was easy, flat out easy. You guys are probably lose your minds. It's not Robert Plant. Obviously, I can't because I have Bonzo. As much as I love Robert Plant's voice. It's not John. It's not Paul. It's not Roger. This guy, in my opinion, has the greatest pure classic rock voice ever for me. And that guy is Paul Rogers.
Oh, yes.
I
love Bad Company. Bad Company.
Great pick.
And Paul Rogers' voice is killer in anything he sings. Going back to Free, when he's All Right Now. And I almost, you know, another great guitarist I almost thought of, even though, you know, sadly his career life ended much shorter than it should have, was Paul Kossoff, who was in Free. But he, of course, he dipped into the needle too much and died well shorter than he should have. Paul Rogers sings everything perfect. It's just whether he's in Free, whether he was in Bad Company, whether he was in The Firm with Jimmy Page singing Radioactive, whether he sang for Freddie Mercury. And yeah, I did not forget Queen at all. Freddie was a hard one not to pick because I love Freddie. But Paul Rogers has the perfect classic rock voice, in my opinion. That guy could literally sing anything. He could sing The Phone Book. He could be play by play for King of the Ring 95, and it would be the greatest pay per view ever, just because he's Vince and Paul Rogers. He is perfect for me. And again, so many Leaf front men that you can't forget, and I'm sure you guys will discuss him, talk about him as well. I love Paul Rogers, the most amazing classic rock voice I've ever heard. So my band, Paul Rogers, George Harrison, John Entwistle, John Bonham, and I'll give an edge to one over the other. Tony Banks is my keyboard man.
That is a great lineup, Scott.
That's a great band.
You're not messing with that. That's brilliant.
You need to talk, guys, because I thought my ass off on this. But I, as you know, just besides American bands, particularly the lead singers and the guitarists, because there's so many great guitarists and frontmen that have come from your side of the pond, like Freddie. I mean, I Brian May. I couldn't not think Brian May. I mean, that guy made his guitar, and he's like a physicist or something, isn't he? Or some type of studied books or something.
He's got two doctorates now, I think, because Mr. May. Yes. Is it astrology? I want to say.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, it's kind of ridiculous. I've been chewing that up for weeks. And then I remember, and I'm like, oh, this looks great. And then I looked and went, shit, I can't use Jimmy Page and John Bonham. Damn it. And then I had, that's a great challenge, by the way. I'm glad you guys did that. I know you're probably wondering, I didn't pick any Stones. I don't want to say I do like the Stones. I love the Stones. I like the Stones. But they're not in my – I would never put them in my hierarchy of British bands I would love. Like I would put on – oh, I want to listen to some good British rock. I don't think of them first or second or third. that's just me. No disrespect to Mick or Keith, although I'm still wondering why Keith's alive. I do love Ronnie Wood, great guitarist. But I don't – my personal opinion, and maybe this is a debate for another show – I don't think they've had a good album since Tattoo You, but that's just me.
Oh, I don't think that's an especially controversial piece.
No, not at all, Scott.
So, anyway, there we go, guys. Have at it.
Sure.
Right, who wants to follow that, boys?
I think I will go next, as it's, I would say, well, similar enough to Scott's thematically, and I reckon you boys might take it in another direction. So I think I'll go next, if that is okay with everybody.
That's fine by me.
I will go back to front. I have two guitarists in my band. I have them bass, drums, and vocalists. So I will start with the drums. And do you remember, Callum and Ben, when you guys were slagging off the Iron Man match and then I picked it in my top 100 list about 2 minutes later?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Well, let me tell you who my drummer is. So last week I was listening to the Rolling Stones live album, Your Yaya's House. And that album is fifth, it had happened in it. And that album is famous for a lot of utterances, both off stage and on stage. a lady in the crowd after the first song shouts out, "Paint it black, you devils," and they didn't play it. And of course, you've got Mick also after the first song, "My trousers are about to fall down. You wouldn't want my trousers to fall down, would you?" And the crowd react accordingly. One thing he also says midway through side two, very accurately indeed, is Charlie's good tonight, isn't he? So Charlie Watts is the drummer in my band. It's metronomic. I reckon, I don't think Charlie Watts ever does anything but drum. You could watch Charlie Watts in 1962. You could watch him in 2020. He's doing exactly the same thing. Mm. Doing exactly the same head wobble, exactly the same foot movements, I'm sure. To look at him, you would think he doesn't have a care in the world. But this might be a very controversial view. I'm going to put one through. You could argue that he is the most important member of the Stones, certainly live, because I've got a ton of Rolling Stones live stuff. We'd get your yayas out, lots of other live albums as well. And he is always there. When it gets a little sticky with Jagger Richards on stage, he manages to bring them back in. Any iteration of the band, some of his specific drumming on tracks are just going through my head now, something like Play With Fire and how he drives Have You Seen Your Mother Baby, stuff like that. Underrated is probably not the right word, but I still think he is, but now he's in my band, so he's finally Charlie Watts getting the respect he deserves being a fictional British band. You gone?
I was going to say that you used exactly the right word when you said underrated about him. I don't know if Scott's seen it, but I'm guessing you two did when the Stones played Glastonbury a couple of years ago.
Yep.
So, you know, Mick's doing the whole posture and he's doing the dancing thing and Charlie's just there in the background. It looks like he's playing quite a slow beat, but he's not. He's going for it. He's not needing like a backing drummer just on the side helping him out. He's absolutely got it. I don't even know how old he's got to be. 72 now, something like that, hasn't he?
It's got to be touching 80 now, surely.
Somebody have a look.
But he doesn't look young on the front cover of the Rolling Stones, and that came out in 1960.
You know, here's a British reference, so Scott won't get this, but it's like he's like a kind of Ron Seal, isn't he? Does exactly what he says on the tin. That's Charlie Watts. You know exactly what you're going to get.
He's 79.
There you are.
79.
Doesn't look a day over, etc. So Charlie Watts.
17.
Oh, there you go. Well played. My bass player has already been mentioned. So our first, I will be interested to see how many other matches we have, but it's also the Ox, John Entwistle. And what you want from a rhythm section, him and Charlie, I can just imagine them interlocking together and you could almost just zone everybody else out. Well, not with this band, but drum solos and bass solos, they get a bad rap and perhaps understandably so, but I'd be happy to hear either one of these two do those for their respective instruments. Again, I point the listener in the specific direction of a live album, and that is the 2-CD reissue of Live at Leeds that came out in 2006. The original live album only has 6 tracks on it, but this has everything they did for the first hour and a half, and the entire second disc is all of Tommy front to back done live. And you just hear the way Entwistle locks into tracks like Young Man Blues. He brings to life tracks which on record were a little flat, like Tattoo. Even some of the more fluffier things like I'm a Boy, they're just huge in your ears. The Ox, he just got on, much like Charlie Watts, really. He just got on with his job, let the other famous people do their thing. But just imagine the band without him, and you can't. So the Ox is my bass player. Lead guitarist. Do I have a lead guitarist in this band? Because they're two very different ones, but I'll go with this guy first. Such fluidity in his guitar playing. Underrated solo career too. Again, somebody very much at loggerheads with the other prominent member of the band. And that is Mr. David Gilmour. I love this man's work.
Great choice. Great choice.
Animals, I think, is his tour de force. There's some lengthy tracks on there. And what Roger Waters is, you know, going down the Roger Waters lyric rabbit hole, there is Dave Gilmour somehow managing to bring some of those more esoteric utterances to life. He's a wonderful guitar player. If there's one man who I would love to see, because I know he still does solo shows to this day, Dave Gilmour, I've never seen him live. I would love to be able to do that. I think he's a glorious guitar player, and that is the word I use advisedly. So he would be lead, and
My other guitar player is a rather mischievous pick, as well as our bassist and drummer would connect. Dave Gilmour and my other guitarist would either hit it off or it would be a car crash, but it would be a damn fucking fun car crash. And my other guitarist is Mick Jones from The Clash. Not a purist choice.
Wow.
Understand.
Wow. Okay.
I tell you what, if you listen to his extremely rudimentary playing on The Clash's debut album, and when they had Sandy Pearlman producing Give Me Enough Rope, and when they ran the gamut on London Calling, and when they run the gamut again on Sandinista, okay, Combat Rock was crap, but never mind that. He is another one who was just able to get it, and he could adapt to any style. Now, he pulls off stuff like Brand New Cadillac, as well as he pulls off something like Deny. Another, again, underrated player. I love his stuff, Big Audio. Dynamite as well. So Mick Jones, again, finally getting his moment in the sun. My band. They waited this moment. They're in Rory McNamara's band. It's finally happening. So, yes. I'm not sure how well he and Dave Gilmour would necessarily get on, given some of their differences, but it would be a laugh finding out. And as I'm sure if anybody who knows me will know, not a single Led Zeppelin member in my band before now. So you know who my vocalist is. It's Bobby. It's Percy. It's Robert Plant. Again, let's take the whole career. From the youthful exuberance with which he attacks the first line of Good Times, Bad Times on Led Zeppelin 1, all the way 50 years later to the closing bars on his Carry Fire album that came out last year. This man can do the lot. Even some of his supporters, I say, would label him as a one-dimensional vocalist. And they are wrong, wrong, wrong. The man's range is exceptional. Over the course of different albums, sometimes they're over the course of different songs, sometimes over the course of different lines. Listen to the way he works with Sandy Denny on The Battle of Evermore, for example. Look at the 100 Shades of Fury he belts out, Wearing and Tearing. Listen to and watch the goosebumps that you will get on your arms when he gets to the first verse of 29 Palms. I think he is the greatest vocalist, big call, the greatest vocalist these shores, maybe any shores, have ever produced. So Robert Plant is at the helm, and so he should be. So to recap, we've got Charlie Watts on drums, we've got John Entwistle on bass, we've got Dave Gilmour and Mick Jones on guitar, and Mr. Robert Plant Esquire on vocals.
Excellent.
Love it.
Excellent.
Not too
shabby
at all.
I kind of like the combo of Mick Jones, kind of in your face, harsh storytelling, and David Gilmour's kind of sit back, wink, and kind of sing songy your way through a song. You know what I mean? Like, though, that dichotomy is amazing. Those are great.
Picture. I'm ending the punk be prog wars finally in August 2020.
Exactly.
43 years after the fact, it's finally come to an end. But yeah, I had great fun picking that. So, Ben, thank you very much for giving us
this. You're right, mate.
I loved it. Over to you. Who's it going to be next?
Okay, so I will go back to front. I've gone for a five piece. We have got one, obviously, got frontman, two guitarists, one bass, one drummer. I've cheated a bit, so I'm going to say my keyboardist is going to be off to the side. You know, it will be like the Rolling Stones at Glastonbury. They'll be doing all that work. I'll try to keep it brief because quite a few of mine have been mentioned. People have been mentioned already. So Scott said it was a straight fight between two gentlemen for his drummer. You'll be pleased to hear, Scott, I went for the other guy because I want some rock and roll excess in my band. The drummer was the easiest person for me to pick. It's got to be Keith Moon. For me, it's like Keith Moon and fantastic. Everybody else for the drums. And what more can you say? Just a true wild man of rock and roll. Absolutely adore The Who. And him in particular. He was amazing. My bassist will need people to write songs. We're going to need some backing vocals in our band. And that's a bit rudimentary saying backing vocals for this guy, because he's obviously the main vocal band of all time, and that is Mr. Paul McCartney. He's gonna be doing all our writing. He'll join in with some songs. I'm not gonna siphon him off to the side and go, Paul, you just stay quiet, mate. So he'll be there. Underrated is a great word. Very underrated bass player, I think. My two guitarists, I used a simple process, which was a yes or no process. So, Scott, you might not know my first person. The other two gentlemen were. The question was, did you do the guitar solo at the end of I Am the Resurrection? Yes or no? Everybody else but one person said was obviously no. The person who answered yes was a guy by the name of John Squire. He is my first guitarist. Yeah. Obviously, absolutely fantastic. The Dave Stone Roses album is a work of art, in my opinion. I am one of those people who actually like the Second Coming in 96. I know there's not many people out there, but I did. I was quite a fan of this. 94, sorry.
I've got to be that guy, sorry. You know me well enough to know now. When it's music, I'm that guy, especially.
You can be that guy. I have no complaints about that. And I like the Seahorses. They were a great little band. And yeah, when I got to see the Stone Roses again in 20, I want to say it was 2017. I might be wrong on that as well. But yeah, they were absolutely fantastic. So there's one. My other guitarist, again, it's a yes or no question. Did you or did you not do the opening chords to Kashmir? That was the yes or no question. Again, all but one person was able to answer that question correctly. So my guitarist is, of course, Mr. Jimmy Page. I think we've all picked Led Zeppelin so far. So yeah, Page is just the man on guitars. Him and Squire together will be absolutely amazing.
Given how much a lot of the Second Coming actually sounds, I think John Squire would appreciate Jimmy Page being in the band. Well, maybe not. Yeah.
I'm going for 12 minute guitar riffs all the time. It's going to be absolutely an amazing album. My front man, this was a two-way fight, and I cheated slightly. So the person I rejected was only in a band for 2 years, and that was, of course, Mr. David Bowie. But I thought with my guitarist, I was trying to match everybody up, and I was thinking, is he going to fit in with them? Probably not. So I ditched David. That sounds wrong to say that, being the Bowie mark than I am. So the person I picked was a guy who in recent years, thanks to a certain Oscar-winning film, has enjoyed a renaissance in his career, in the career. And people have finally realized what a great band they actually were. And that is, of course, Queen. And that man is Freddie Mercury. Live Aid is the greatest live performance of any band I've ever seen, with, of course, Radio Gaga being the greatest song. So I've got the full range. I've got like great guitarist. I've got the rock and roll excess. I've got my songwriter in there as well to write everything up. So from back to front, Keith Moon on bass, Paul McCartney, John Squire, and Jimmy Page on guitar, and Freddie up top on the stick.
Bravo.
I'm glad somebody get Freddie in there, because it would have been a travesty if we went through four and didn't put Freddie. Spoilers, I haven't got Freddie. no, wonderful. So I'll go with mine again. Start from the back going forward. On drumming and backing vocals, if you can think of that. It was drumming and backing vocals on arguably the greatest debut album of all time. Has done nothing in between his band splitting up and reforming, and it's going to be a travesty that's looking like he's only ever going to be featured on two albums. Ben mentioned John Squire, but I think another part of that important part of like the end of I Am the Resurrection is representing the Stone Roses, Rennie, on drums.
Yes!
I think he's... not ridiculous, underrated, because if the people who are fans of the Stone Roses will know how good a drummer he is, but haven't seen the Stone Roses since they reformed. You go through, even when they're doing like Fool's Gold, I Am the Resurrection, even the start of well, the start of I Am the Resurrection. You've got the start of I Want to Be Adored. You're just prominent drummers throughout. So after Rennie is, I wanted to give Rennie some love. My bass player joined his band at the age of 15. Never looked back from there, you could say. Despite him being well known as being part of a band, he's pretty tasty as a solo artist as well. But not before he earned his wings.
Oh.
He's got so many accomplishments that he would rival Scott's t-shirt, including an Oscar, 18 Grammys, and being inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame twice. In 2002, he became a Knight of the Realm, representing the Beatles, Sir Paul McCartney.
Supermatch game. Sorry.
I can't add anything else to what you guys have said about Paul McCartney, other than he could not be on it. He's one of the Beatles. one of the Beatles would had to make it into my list somehow. Guitarist number, so I'm swithering on whether to who I probably make my rhythm and my lead guitar, but I think this guy would need to be my lead guitar. One of only two surviving members of the original lineup of his band, who are one of the most revered in their generation. shockingly, in my research, I found that he only ever had one number one album and two number one singles, neither of which were in the UK. He's Mike Graham's favourite wrestler, I've called him, because he broke 1,000 guitars and drew a metric fuck ton of dimes, representing the Who, Pete Townsend.
Very good.
I could not have it. I could not have a member of the
Who. That was good.
I could not have a member of the Who in there. But having seen the Who a couple of times, I've only, again, you're saying, like, I never saw Keith Moon. I never saw John Entwistle, although in a roundabout way I did, because they did all this fancy technology. One of the times I went to see them, it was quite good. And I had a lead singer in mind straight away, so I couldn't pick Roger up front. So Pete Townsend, by the process of elimination, had to go in there. Rhythm guitar / piano. Recorded, I got his first recording contract at 17. His first number one album at 20, and has had a number one album in the 80s, 90s, 2010s, 2000s, 2010s, and the 2020s.
Wow.
Yeah. He's going to be one of my songwriters, along with Sir Maka. He wrote a song that was so good that it got to number 21 in the UK charts, and it wasn't even released here. And he wrote that song in 10 minutes, whilst he was drunk. That song is That's Entertainment. The band is The Jam. The guitarist and piano player is the Mod Father, Paul Weller.
Oh, yeah.
Great choice.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't go through. Again, it's one of these ones I couldn't not put him in. He was penciled in right from the very start. And the singer would probably come to a surprise to no one. Singer on arguably the best debut album of all time again. Followed up by arguably the best follow-up album of all time. He's in a current career renaissance I've got here. After a shaky effort in the middle, he's proven now that form is temporary but class is permanent. My lead singer, from Manchester, representing Oasis, Liam Gallagher.
Mm-hmm. Had to be.
No problem with that.
I could not leave him off. The guy is an absolute legend. I mentioned this loads of times, I think, on previous in chats and in previous episodes. I went to see him last November. It was a religious experience. It was superb. So I could have him in Oasis era or modern era. Skip BDI, not that good. But he had to be my lead singer. So I think I've got a band that could probably mesh together well. Paul Weller and The Who have done some stuff together. Liam Gallagher and The Who have done some stuff together. Paul McCartney could just do anything. Rennie can play anything on the drums. I just thought the only thing that's an issue is Paul Weller is really good pals with Noel Gallagher. But we'll put that to one side. Noel's a bit of a cock just now anyway, so Paul Weller's probably going to fall out of something soon. So to summarise, my band, Rennie on drums, bass is Sir Paul McCartney, my guitarists are Pete Townsend and Paul Weller, and my lead singer is Liam Gallagher.
On a little side note, Rory, how old did you feel when you heard the other day it was 25 years since the Britpop battle?
Yeah, my word, eh? 25 years ago this week, the Battle of Britpop.
Yes.
Bloody hell.
There were so many. I think you guys are probably the same. There were so many guys I could have chosen to put in this band.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh yeah. Like, and so many from the different generations as well. I think we've all proved that.
Guys we haven't picked. Ben, you were going to pick David Bowie. Mm-hmm. Thankfully, finally somebody picked Freddie on up front. But I was thinking of guys like Richard Ashcroft, a songwriter Peter Hook from New Order, and Joy Division fame. Mm. Oh, so many excellent guys we could have picked from, but I think we've done superbly.
We have indeed. I love that. That was fantastic.
I totally forgot about Weller. I'm quite embarrassed by that.
That's okay. I'll not cast it up to you for too long, Ben.
Thanks.
But I was quite shocked to hear that his latest album got to number one, but that's a number one in the last five decades, number one album in the last five decades for him.
Yeah.
Not too bad at all.
I haven't heard that new album. I must get on it.
Wonderful stuff.
I love that.
Listening to any of those bands would certainly put me in a happy place.
A gaw. Golf clap it.
So shall we move on to the happy place, or have you guys got any other honourable mentions you'd like
oh,
to?
We'd be here all night. I think it's a whole other show.
A long day.
But so making that of that, Scott. We'll just make this a whole new show, shall we? Just talk about British bands for 5 hours every week on the Wrestling Network.
Pretty much. Keith Richards and Brian May almost made it in, but that was about it.
Keith Richards can be my mascot, because how that guy hasn't died yet is quite is absurd.
You know what's sad, guys? Two things. Number one, all great bands, by the way. I got three things that I wanted to say before we move on. Number one, I do know the guy who runs the pop feed. I'm just saying. Number two, because
he knows a guy.
I know a guy. Because I'll be honest with you, that topic has crossed my mind many, many times. So number two, you were talking about Charlie Watts. You know who the youngest member of the Stones is?
I want to say, is it Ronnie Wood?
Ronnie Wood is 73. Keith Richards is 76, which is 2 years younger than Mick and 3 years younger than Charlie Watts, even though he looks 50 years older than everybody else on this planet. So
that's the thing about Keith Richards. Keith Richards was in Pirates of the Caribbean as a
ghost, which fit because, you know, he was. And
it's
number three.
It's the greatest wonder of modern science how, like, Keith Richards has not, like, left us yet.
I know. It's almost like he should have gone to DDP's house with Scott Hall and Jake Roberts. You know. And I'm about to say something that I hopefully will not lose my cred as a music aficionado, but – and maybe you guys can help me with this, but I don't know a ton of Stone Roses.
That's fine.
There's not too much to know. Two albums.
Yeah, to be honest. We weren't holding back. There is literally two albums.
Oh, okay.
So discovery will be very easy, Scott. You've got the Stone Roses and you've got so it won't take you long.
I don't know if I can speak for the other two, but that's part of the mystique is that there's so little material from them.
Indeed.
And wow. they went on the hiatus for so long, and then. Because they were how long were they separated for? About 15 years.
Yeah, because Ian Brown obviously went. Because Ian Brown had a pretty successful solo career, and then obviously Manny was part of the Primal Scream.
Yep.
I don't know if Rennie did anything. Did Rennie go into any other bands?
No, Rennie did nothing.
Yeah. So they were all doing. They've all got three of them have gone off and done other little bits and have gone done bits and bobs, and then they got back together. I want to say about 2015.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And then there was this whole thing of, are they going to do any new material? But they didn't, did they? It was just the gigs.
They did two singles that.
Two singles.
Oh, did they? Oh, yes. You did do a single. Yes.
Beautiful thing.
Yeah.
Beautiful thing. Beautiful Rose and No Gallagher song.
Yes, he did do the singles. Thank you.
Okay, I feel better now.
Yeah. But honestly, if
the deep dive is only like 3 feet.
Yeah, I mean, if the first album is far and away better, but the second album is pretty. The second album is good as well. So it's, but yeah, if you want to do a deep dive into the Stone Roses, it won't take you. It'll take you an afternoon.
Yeah. The first album is sort of even like non-indie rock fans, I'd say it's on that everybody is like, yeah, must listen to list, isn't it? It's probably the British album of the 80s. I'm quite comfortable saying that. Yeah, the second album is not for everybody. But you can listen to it. I'll say it's the best British album of the 80s. I can hear the disagreement already.
All Mod Cons would say hello.
Oh.
Another feed.
Another feed, yes. Yeah.
But Scott, report back to us. Do your shallow dive and.
I'll get some meetings.
two albums, and two other singles. That's all you need.
Okay, Callum, say happy place in a random sentence again, so you can rescue that segue. You worked so hard on it.
It was like the best segue ever.
Well, I'm just trying to see. I'm looking through the thingy. I Want to Be Adored, She Bangs the Drum, Waterfall. Well, Waterfall could be somebody's happy place, I suppose.
God.
Well, this is the one, is song number 10 on the original one. And because it's our 10th episode, we could only go in one direction, and that was to ask Scott to come on, and it's now time to visit Scott's happy place.
Better-ish.
I can have more if you want.
No, you know. It's very fine.
We should just do it like Michael Scott declaring bankruptcy. Just go, happy place!
Do your stuff, Benjamin.
Okay, so for people who haven't listened to any of our other episodes, first of all, why not? But second of all, when we do have a guest on, we do a little feature called The Happy Place. I keep mentioning it, but we did start as a ring joke pre-COVID of, if you had a weekend to yourself in your house on your own, what would you like to do and watch? I think everybody sort of experienced a little bit of that over the last 6 months or so. So the rules are, you pick three albums, one TV show, three films, one wrestling pay-per-view, five matches. The matches, none of them can be from your pay-per-view, and we will be live watching one of the matches at the end. I think that's all the rules. It's my feature. If I make the rules, there we go. So back to you, Cal.
you've swung it back to me, but you've done it so well. Yeah. So I think I'm just going to, like a revolving door, I'll just move swiftly on to our esteemed guest.
Yes, it is his happy place.
So, what shall we start? Since we're on music, shall we start with the music?
Yes.
Okay. This is crazy. Because albums is kind of ridiculous. Because I could have 800, but I broke down three. Because as much as I love a ton of artists, if I have to take an album from them, there's not a lot of albums from beginning to end that I love. As much as I love bands, you know, a lot of times you pick artists, you pick you know, an album with two songs here, three songs here. So believe it or not, as much as one of my favorite bands, not a British band, which is Aerosmith. I do not have an Aerosmith album here, even though I love Toys in the Attic and I love Rocks. But needed to take a sip of Newcastle. So my first album, Appetite for Destruction, Guns N' Roses. Because I need 50 minutes of wanting to kill somebody. No. It's just heavy and hard as can be from top to bottom, and there's not one bad song in the bunch. Okay. Number two, Dr. G would hit me if I didn't pick at least one from him, so I'm going to pick 52nd Street by Billy Joel, another album that I love from beginning to end. And then I had to pick an album from these guys, so I culled through the catalog, and which album do I love every single song from? And I thought, and I thought, and I thought, and I looked, and I said, Physical Graffiti.
Beauty.
I was torn between Physical Graffiti 4 and 2. Or sorry, 4 Sticks, or however you want to name the fourth album, because they never put an IMF. They screwed with everybody and never put a title on it. But either Zeppelin 2, Zeppelin 4, or Physical Graffiti. And because two of my favorite – my two favorite, as much as, and I love Physical Graffiti from beginning to end, but it also has my two favorite songs ever in the history of the universe, Kashmir and 10 Years Gone. I love Kashmir is my favorite song ever, ever. A lot of great moments in my life have that song connected to it. So, and 10 Years Gone, I mean, just that opening riff by Jimmy, that dun 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 dun, dun, dun. Damn it, that's good. Damn, that's so good. It's smooth. It's melodic. You think of all the other great songs, you know, the Immigrant Song, which I loved that they put in the Thor Ragnarok trailer. Makes that movie amazing for me. And Rock and Roll. And I mean, you know, but I think a lot of their softer songs don't get the kind of, not respect, because it's Zeppelin. They're respected top to bottom. But a lot of their softer stuff doesn't totally get talked about like their, you know, their amazing stuff, you know, their heavy stuff is. Physical Graffiti has everything going for it for me, top to bottom. Great heavy songs, great softer songs, but particularly because Kashmir and 10 Years Gone, that album comes with me and I can listen to it from beginning to end. Also, on a side note, unheralded Zeppelin song that, again, I don't think got any respect until it was in the until it was in Almost Famous. Tangerine. Just saying. Tangerine's amazing. So those are my three albums. Guns N' Roses, Appetite for Destruction, Billy Joel, 52nd Street, and Led Zeppelin, Physical Graffiti.
I knew you wouldn't miss out, Mr. Crisco.
I wanted to put a Bowie. It would probably be Ziggy. But the problem with Bowie is there are some albums that have like three or four really good songs and then four songs that I can't understand. So like if you listen to the Berlin Tree, I mean, we can go on another. This is kind of a test thing for that other discussion I'm going to have. If you listen to the Berlin Trilogy, a lot of songs in those three albums are so good. And then others you're like, what the fuck is he talking about? Although that was his heavy heroin phase. So that might be it. But but who knows? But those albums are great. My show was hands down The Sopranos. That's easy.
Yeah.
My three movies. No shock here. The Godfather. Caddyshack, because I need my comedy. And then, for you guys, because I had to pick the one, and if you listen to the series, you know that this is my favorite of all of them. For Your Eyes Only. Because that's my favorite Bond of all time. Although it was very hard to not pick Skyfall, because I fucking love Skyfall. But For Your Eyes Only is my favorite Bond of all time. So those are my three movies. My pay-per-view is fitting for the theme of the show today, and that's why I didn't mention it earlier. But my favorite pay-per-view probably of all time, I know everybody says WrestleMania 3, and I love WrestleMania 3. It's my favorite WrestleMania of all time. But this is probably a pay-per-view I could watch beginning to end and literally never get sick of it. And I think it was mentioned earlier by all three of you in some capacity. And that is SummerSlam 1989. I could watch that show beginning to end.
Mentioned by me last month in this very segment.
Yep. Beginning to end. Doesn't care. Yep. I don't care. The number two on the list, which is very close, is SummerSlam 98. Fits because the two numbers are flip-flopped. But if I had to pick one over the other, I always go back and forth. I have to give the edge to SummerSlam 89. I could watch that show but beginning to end a zillion times and never get sick of it. Warrior Rude, the main event, that six-man with Demolition and the other six-man with Tito and the Rockers against Martel and the Rougeaus. Just nothing's wrong with that show for me. Nothing. Jesse just making Tony pee his pants. It's just amazing. Absolutely amazing. I just love watching Jesse just bully Tony for 2.5 hours. It's hilarious. You mean you could shoot him? You're as dumb as Monsoon. Oh, it's so great.
There's a live watch waiting to happen. Rory and Scott just waxing lyrical about SummerSlam 89.
Oh, my God.
Well, absolutely amazing.
Tissues at the handy, I think.
Yes.
I think that's it. Right. Is that our first double? Or double up?
I think that is our first pay-per-view double up.
Yes, it is.
There you go.
I remember, speaking of guys, one of my favorite special relations pod moments of all time, and I think I've said this to you guys, is I think it was episode two because it was the Christmas special, Christmas episode, and you guys were chatting about stuff while randomly having December to Dismember in the background. I think that's one of my favorite special relations moments of all time. Because, you know, it's like, oh, look at this piece of crap going on. Hey, let's talk about other stuff. And, you know, because that's just the way that show is. But that made me laugh. That was one of my favorite special relations moments of all time, is you guys just talking randomly while one of the worst pay-per-views ever is playing in the background. Good main event, though. I contend that chamber main event is unheralded. It's a lot better than people say. The undercard is garbage, but that's typical, you know, Paul when he doesn't have things going on. But that I contend that chamber match is underappreciated. And now my five matches. All right. Well, obviously, two of them are easy because they're the top two on my GWWE ballot. And that is, of course, Randy Savage versus Ricky Steamboat at WrestleMania 3. It's a zillion stars. Sean Kidd will not steal any of those stars from me. It's a billion stars. I don't really give a damn what he said. So, too bad.
He tried when he was on, but...
Remember, boys, he gave
his very best shot.
Remember, they don't call him the king of the shit tape for nothing.
That's right. He has a good odor for that. Number two is my number two match on my list. And that is Triple H versus Steve Austin, Three Stages of Hell from No Way Out 2001. Another match I never get sick of.
Yeah, that's a match on anybody's list worth their salt. Right, Colin?
Anybody's.
Moving on.
Speaking of favorite special relation moments.
Yes, we all make mistakes, don't we? That was some bigger than others, to be fair. That was quite large.
Number three, we're going to switch over now to this year's ballot that we're working on for, I guess, next year's release. Magnum TA versus Tully Blanchard, the I Quit Steel Cage match from Starrcade 85. Number two, Ric Flair versus Ricky Steamboat. Two out of three falls for the NWA World's title at Clash of the Champions 6. And finally, a match that I believe it was Callum mentioned earlier, Triple H versus Shawn Michaels, the street fight from SummerSlam 2002. Those I would bring to my happy place.
Cracking. You can pick what? Which one are we going to watch, though?
Well, we're not going to watch Flair Steamboat from Clash because we'll be here till Wednesday. So, why don't we? What's the best one here? You know what? Since we're working on our GWCWs, why don't we watch Magnum and Tully?
Yeah,
from Starrcade 85. Yep. I have no problem watching that.
I need to rewatch anyway, so let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it. To the network we go.
By the way, on the background that I had, Callum, and you'd appreciate this, I did put on the Drew playlist. And there was a moment, Drew's wrestling Ricochet, and Ricochet actually does a Hurricane Rana off of a basketball hoop.
Wow.
It's ridiculous. The first match, The first match is Drew winning the Evolve title from Chris Hero, which I could see why Vince wants him to wear a shirt. Number two was Drew versus Ricochet, and yeah, they're wrestling outside. They're wrestling outside the ring. I think Drew was trying to do a power bomb, and he jumped over Drew, landed did a chin up on a basketball hoop, and then did a Hurricane Rana on Drew through a bleacher. So that was kind of cool. And then now the third match is Drew and Roddy Strong. So I don't know the dates on these. They didn't put graphics on these, and I have it on mute, so I don't know what the dates are in these. But anyway, it's been a great playlist. So
it sounds like it's got some good stuff on it so far. That might need to be the background noise to my work tomorrow.
There you go.
So, I hope we all got Starrcade 85 up then, gentlemen.
I'm sure
it's on the network elsewhere as well.
Let me go to the...
Because I've not...
Starrcade 85, and it's there in the chapters.
It's logged me out because I've not used it for a while. I know it's quite shocking.
That happened to me the other day. I haven't watched in my living room here because I watch all my stuff in my bedroom, and my living room logged out too. So, all right, let's go to...
I've got it at 127.35.
Okay, Starrcade 85. Yeah. All right. Okay.
Yeah, right there. The name of the match is on my screen. There we go.
Yes.
Yeah, I've got the name of the match.
Mine's still spinning. Come on. Yep, and that's what I got. So.
Should we all hit play on three?
Yes. Take it away, sir.
On three. One, two, three. And away we go.
All right.
Get the captions on.
Can I just first of all cut into Scott's happy place? How pleased I was that you picked Appetite for Destruction. Thank you, Scott.
Oh. Absolutely.
It's a must.
I use Welcome to the Jungle for my intro song on Chicken Salad because I do think it's like the greatest intro to any band ever. Like literally tells you everything about that band in a minute.
Pretty much. I don't disagree on that.
It's the album in miniature, really. Talk about setting the tone.
Yep. I agree 100%. Absolutely.
I don't want to undersell Tully's swank white robe here, by the way.
I mentioned the rope getting the jobber entrance here. Currently in the ring.
I want to preface by saying, Callum, when you and I've been saying this to the doctor the last few days, when you, doctor and Sean get to July, your July episode of Crock and Roll, the July stuff is just so great. I'm watching the Mid-Atlantic show, not the show you guys are watching. I'm watching the other weekend show. But the build is just amazing. The title change comes out of nowhere. I don't want to spoil anything for you, but it's absolutely amazing. The build from this out of the Great American Bash. So looking forward to when you guys get there. It's pretty awesome.
Oh, I've been thoroughly enjoying it. Watching it all. Sean does a great job of making sure we get everything. We watch all the good stuff, so it's been brilliant so far. And then you've got, I don't know how we're going to do it for, we've got June to come, but I don't know how we're going to do the TV and the Great American Bash. I don't know if it's going to be over two or not, but I'm sure Sean will let us know in due course.
Look at young Earl there, all his hair. Magnum won the title back in March, so this is pre you guys. He won the title right at the end of March. He beat Wahoo McDaniel, who had won a tournament in October. I only have this fresh in my mind because I've been watching. October of 84. And then Wahoo left. I think he went to Mid-South. And what's weird is the Tully title change comes out of nowhere because he really wasn't. Tully had lost the TV title to Dusty, And then just out of the blue, he beats Magna. It was very weird. It came out of nowhere.
We've just in spoilers for the Croc and Roll. You'll have heard by now. Sorry, but Tully's the TV. He's just beating Dusty for the TV title, and Magnum's up against Flair.
Right. Yeah.
It's 35 years ago, boys. I think you're safe.
There's obviously a friend of the show, Baby Doll. Sean's Twitter work has been stellar.
Oh, Sean's Twitter followers are on fire. He's got like Goldilocks from TNA. Who else has he got? He's got Baby Doll. He's got Vince Russo,
Nikita. I think, and you know, a couple more we'll probably get. I reckon we'll get Flair at some point.
I know. After the last episode of Chicken Salad, he's trying to get Joe Fowler, but he's struggling. He's struggling with that one.
If we could get Herb Koons, now that would be. I was thinking, guys. I mean, just going to not gimmick infringement, but the way that the mothership has got the Herb Koons tidbits, you think we could get the Finn Martin tidbits going to go from Power Slam magazine?
Idiot.
That's fun.
I'm still upset we're not going to be hearing anyone from the old CFWA. That's
I found a YouTuber. There's a guy who's got like a lot of CNWA stuff on our channel. Also found. I think he's also got the complete run of Herb Abrams UWF.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. And in Herb's mind, of course, that Bushwhackers tag title match at WrestleMania 6.
Refused to accept that Hogan Warrior could be face face. I like that one. Maybe Warrior will turn here. Here, no, he'll definitely turn here. Now this time he will.
There's a Saturday night's main event coming up. He'll do it there.
That's a house show in the arse end of nowhere, Delaware. If you can do the turn there.
You know, it's funny that I love this match so much because, and I'm sure Callum, you guys will document it. Magnum's one of those guys, like, you know, his squashes were always fat, were always quick. He rarely won matches in more than, you know, a minute and a half, 2 minutes. And that goes back even pre-Crockett. He was like that in Mid-South, too. Watts had him winning matches in 30 seconds. So that's, I don't know if they protected him because they didn't think he was that good. I mean, I always thought that was weird. Like, you know, why did they, through his whole career they did that? Through all of Mid-South, all of Crockett? It was very strange, you know? I never understood that.
We're talking, I think it's in the first half when we're talking about Magnum Flair. We do go over that. The good doctor has, because he'll, I don't know if he had a run in Florida as well, but Dr. G did have some, he started a lengthy discussion about that. So we spoke about it on there. Mm. My take from it was, Crockett wants them to be the mega, they're Hulk Hogan, but I think Vince could have made, if you look at Magnum, Vince could have made him a mega star. I think he was just at the right time, but just in the wrong place.
I wonder if it was ever on the cards. There must have been some feelers put out, you would have thought, even at this time.
Maybe.
I mean, you guys know more about this sort of thing than I do. How many months before the accident was this match?
Was it the summer? So it would have been maybe 7 or 8. I'm not sure the date of it, but I think it was the summer of 86.
It's he doesn't appear on another quote unquote big show other than this.
Yeah.
Well, he just looks the business, doesn't he? Look at that.
He just looks the kind of guy Vince would want, doesn't he? Yeah.
He absolutely does.
It's all there. It's all there. It really is.
I mean, he would have been booked. Yeah, sorry, he was in line to be world champion.
Yeah. No doubt.
I'm trying to see when the car accident was.
I remember that because didn't they have to sub somebody in because it was always going to be Flair versus Magnum, wasn't it?
October 14th. Yeah, October 14th, 1986 was the car accident.
No, a bit later than I thought. Okay.
Yeah.
So would it have been Starrcade 86 then?
Yep, it was Starrcade. He was totally set up to beat Flair at Starrcade 86.
That would have been set up. That would have been off the chain.
Yeah, it's a damn shame.
It really is.
Because that feud would have been amazing, and that build was amazing. So instead, they had to rush a face turn out of Nikita.
That's right.
To do that. So
seven or eight minutes in, and both guys are already bleeding the gusher. My God,
it's amazing. Yes.
God, that's the entire left hand side of Tully's face is just ripped off. Fucking hell.
You know on you know how there's like the Muda, you know how in the internet world there's the Muda scale?
There's a scale, yeah.
Well, here in Police to Be Nation, because she loves blood, we need to have the Jenny scale for blood. I think we have to have the Jenny scale for blood because, you know, her. This is amazing.
0.4 and Tully's already pushing. He's over one, I think.
Yeah.
So do you guys think this match might scrape into your top 100 somewhere?
I'd have to really try hard to find a spot for it.
it may be one of these ones that sneaks in for like nostalgia purposes. It might be my 95, 96 area or something. Like that.
With a prevailing wind, if it's lucky.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's you know.
I think this one's sneaky in the run for comp. Well, not even sneaky. Composite top 10.
Yeah,
I think a couple of people have. Oh, here we fucking go. I think a couple of people are going to have this as their number one, you know, even ahead of you-know-what matches.
Very possible. I was just going to say that myself.
Well, I mean, I've said on both main event and on the Saturday special that this match is already in my top three. I just don't know where it's going. It's already in my top three.
It's easy top 10 for me. It's
early projections to me is going to be between like 6 to 10, like that kind of range.
Yeah.
Because my top another five, match my that's... top five is already sorted.
Good Tully, he's like a man possessed there.
Oh, he's awesome.
I'm a bit like Scott just said. Like I have my top five. It's just figuring out the order.
Yeah. Another match in my top three. I mentioned in my, well, since that was the only other non WWE match in my top five, is the Ricky and Flair from Clash 6. That was a tough one because every single Flair Steamboat match is awesome. I mean, it's just really your taste on the specific match itself. My third match in my top three, which I'm not going to say here, you're going to have to go back to the catalog on the Place to Be Wrestling Network to find the second GWCW Pod Blast that our good friend Drew Wardlaw did. I did a topical GWCW Pod Blast with him, and we talked about my other match in my top three, so I'll leave it at that.
You don't have to like make the specific position for it, Scott, but is the Bash at the Beach six man going to be in there? Is like your Hulk Andre match of importance?
Probably. I think it has to be, right?
Yeah, you can't. We talked about this on the chat a few days ago, but it set the tone for the entire business for the next 5 years, and arguably still today to some degree.
Yeah, so I think a lot of people...
It has to be in the list.
Yeah, I agree with you, Roy. I mean, you have to... The problem we're going to... The best part about this ballot... I mean, Tully is an animal. God, he is so damn good. I mean, he is murdering Magnum in this match. This is amazing face heel work right here. Amazing. This is Crockett in the 80s. This is Crockett in the 80s, this match right here. I mean, it's amazing. The thing that a lot of people need to think about when they do their GWCW ballot, and a lot of it is the same when last year when everyone worked on their GWWE ballot. Work rate is not the only thing people need to think about, and I know Aaron George will be very proud of me. Aaron George will be proud of me because, like me, like him, I love Hogan Andre from WrestleMania 3. You have to have that match in there. You have to.
Yeah.
You just have to. It's just the way it is. Same thing with the main event of WrestleMania 1. You have to, you know? Who cares if it's a star and three quarters or whatever? That's not the point. That's not the only thing you look at. It's like when we were looking at, you know, our GWWE or G, you know, superstars, our first ballot way back. I can't have Andre the Giant. The guy had no work rate. Are you for real? You shouldn't even have a ballot. Yeah, that's like a Stephen Grant thing. Anyway, but, you know, but yeah, I mean, that six man at Bash, you have to have it. I mean, yeah. That was like you guys said, an industry changing match. You have to, you know.
So I've got another. Well, it's actually two matches, and I know I've mentioned it to the boys. I think I put it in the chat, and you laugh because it's totally off the beaten track of this and what we talked about so far. And it's the Jericho Malenko match at Slamboree 98 with the Battle Royal, because they've got to go together, and I want to put them high, but it's how high can I realistically put them to?
That's Nazi Clubber.
That was because I think that should have been Tony.
Tony and Bobby, that might be their best commentary together. That bit, apart from the Goldberg Hogan, that's probably their best commentary in WCW.
Goldberg Hogan's got to go in there as well.
And it was at that point that Bobby only really commentated with any passion for guys he really liked. So you could,
yeah.
So when it was Dean Malenko coming out, he's obviously got a lot of respect for Malenko. So he made that a hell of a lot bigger than anyone else could have done.
And like you say, Tony's call of That's Not Sequel Pay is one of the best of all time, in my opinion. Because that crowd goes batshit insane when that happens.
Mm-hmm. I think we are going to need to take some time out of a forthcoming special relations episode and start doing some,
yes. doing some
list planning, I think.
we don't want to go 10 hours again.
We've already set 10 hours aside to go through our lists of the three shows. That's going to happen. look at that.
That could be the next live one. We just do it. We just hit record. And if people want to listen to it, they can. They can jump in at any point.
Remember, boys, we know a guy on the inside who can help us out with that kind of thing.
We know a guy.
Join us in 6 hours. We're 6 hours into our live episode, we might be at number 72.
No, I think there's going to be more overlap. I've said that before. I think there's going to be more overlap.
Yeah, definitely. You've got to remember as well. There's I know it was a bit of a running joke for a while, wasn't there? With this as there's a finite start point and an end point.
Yes.
It's not like GWWE where it's going to keep rolling.
I think they're taking this match to another level. Call me crazy. I think they're about to. I wouldn't think they're
going to.
Yeah. Here we fucking go.
Yes, it's
here we go. We need to be quiet for this bit.
Look, he's at the end of his tether.
Oh. Tully's arm is a mess. Oh, it's amazing. Absolutely amazing.
You can't replicate this moment. I know somebody tried 3 years later and it didn't turn out very well for him. But this is...
this is just...
Look how well they're playing it as well.
This is what a blood feud needs to be into.
Yeah, I believe this is happening. This is what suspension of disbelief is all about.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you know what's really great about it? So it's like a hardcore... obviously a hardcore moment mixed in with some very, very basic grappling, isn't it? You know, it's like a lock. It's always like a lock up at the start of the match where holding the stick to his face and then he fights it off.
That is how you hoist somebody by their own petard. Go on, Magnum, my son. Amazing camera work there. Yeah. Tully's brains are coming out now. Oh my God.
Oh.
Well, I think, gentlemen, we can say, to use the common parlance, that one still stands up.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Fuck me, that's an amazing match.
Yeah, no, it absolutely does. I hope watching that helped you guys, depending where you have it or didn't have it.
It made a certainty even more certain, if that's possible.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
It's gone from 99% possible to 100% probable. Definite.
Yeah.
Oh, I feel drained after that, and it's only about a 15-minute match.
It's amazing.
That is how you use emote. That is I'm going to be Jim Cornette now. That is how you tell a fucking story. Look at that camera shot. Look at that. Phenomenal.
Just great.
Ugh. Top three could be number one.
Yeah,
I would have no issue with anybody having that match, even with the first team. But I have no problem at all if that's anybody's number one match.
Same here.
Jimmy Valiant. Maybe that's all the best stop now.
Well, you have people like myself, because if you remember when we did our WWE list, guys, you had the technical masterpiece at WrestleMania 13, and I had the gore fest of Hell in a Cell as number one. So it's just depending on your individual tastes, but that could get a good few number one votes. But if it's not composite top five, top ten, I'd be very surprised.
Should be. Scott, fantastic picks all round, my friend.
Yep.
Thank you, Scott.
Very placing.
We don't want to keep it going for a little Miss Atlanta Lively. No,
I turned off the PS. let's not spoil it at this stage, you know.
I know exactly, because I can't stand Jimmy Valiant, so that's okay.
although we have got some more great white suit action going on here.
Yes, that is true.
What about Jimmy Valiant? There's an old school DBN reference for you.
Jimmy Valiant's kind of like my Jim Duggan of Crockett, but, so we won't go there. Not my happy place.
I still can't believe Sean got him.
that's fantastic. I think that's it.
Oh no, it's not it, because I've just joined Scott and putting on the best of Drew McIntyre and Evolve. Let's keep going, guys. You've got another 2 hours out of this. No, but that's been absolutely fantastic. I thoroughly enjoyed The Happy Place, as I've thoroughly enjoyed this whole episode that we've done. It's been a banger, as the kids say.
Yeah.
So I feel like that would be a good time to wrap it up, because we've finished the topic, and if we start on something else, we could be here for another 3 hours. Thanks again to Scott for coming on. Speaking of 3 hours, you may have the floor now, Scott, to tell us about the many, many, many things you've got coming up.
Well, you could follow me on Twitter at PTB Podfather. I talk about a lot of great wrestling stuff. I always do anniversary tweets for whenever a pay-per-view comes up that JR and I did an episode of the Mothership for. So go back to our back catalog. I am so proud, and I'm glad to be able to say it here now. I've said it on other shows. The 1 million downloads milestone means the world to me, because, you know, just like JR, I put 9 years into this. And it's amazing the family that has grown. And you three gentlemen, of course, are most definitely part of that. We all have so much fun. We don't take each other seriously, but what we do take seriously is the quality of our shows. And our feed is just loaded with amazing talent and content that I hope everybody just keeps listening. It has been great here in 2020 to debut a ton of amazing shows, three of which you gentlemen are part of and run and host. And it means the world to me that people want to come here and flock and hang out and talk about wrestling and talk about great British bands and talk about anything, liquor, what, you know, blood, whatever. Not in the same sentence, obviously. That'd be gross. But particularly, although who knows the way we get it sometimes at night. But no. And the fact that this year has been kind of a shit show, to be able to still enjoy everything about wrestling and movies and you know, just all sorts of wonderful stuff. And the million downloads just reminded me how great life can be when you have the right people in your life, the best people in your life to help you get through the tough times. And you guys have definitely done that. And I'm so impressed and proud of you three, not only on this show, because this show is fucking hilarious, but the individual shows, senior video, chicken salad, and of course, crock and roll. All three amazing shows. Catch them monthly here on Place to Be on the network feed, along with this show. And all the other great shows we have, PTB NXT, which dropped last week, Jenny and the Gems, and You Don't Know Billy Jack, With This Ring with Ryan Everett. You know, obviously the Place to Be podcast, Main Event. Everybody works so hard here at the network to put on an amazing show, regardless of what the topic is. And I also want to make a point to mention the Place to Be a pop feed, which is kind of slowly starting to rebuild itself. We had gone through some tough times there. But Andy Atherton and Jennifer Smith and Miranda Berthold, everybody over on the pop feed is busting their tails to get things back, and to get back to being the best pop feed we can be. So support them as well. We got great shows over there, as Callum mentioned in the read. And I don't want to disrespect, of course, or not mention our good friends. I call it on the other side of the quad because we're on it's kind of like the Avengers headquarters. We here have a giant piece of imaginary virtual land. And of course, on the other side of the quad, we have the Jenny position, of course, the no-so feed. So we all sit here and we just, you know, in a year that's been so bad in many ways, and I think it's going to get worse before it gets better, unfortunately. We have each other and we have all of you that download and listen to our shows. So thank you for your support since February of 2011. And it's your loyalty and dedication to us that makes us want to do the shows we do and work so hard and plan and prepare. We don't just show up and well, some people do. and you can tell half the time. But you know.
But who does he know?
Yeah. This format thing, I don't do that. We don't do this for the first 9 episodes. No, I'm just kidding. But you know, we work really hard to put. I mean, God, for I'm not to break the fourth wall, but if you look at Callum's crock and roll format, you'll be like, oh my God, it's like being in a unit. But that's because Sean Kidd's so great at what he does. We work so hard to prepare and get ready to fire up the Skype and put on amazing shows. You know, and we thank you again, and I thank you guys. It's been an honor to be on tonight. Today, this show is so great, and you guys are hilarious. And maybe at episode 20, you think you can get that far? Can you promise 10 more episodes out of? Can I promise 10 more episodes? How about 5? Can we get to 15?
Well, the GW will be 3 episodes. So that's
yeah. But anyway, you guys are awesome. Thank you again. And thank you, listeners and family here on the PTB Wrestling Network. It warms my heart every day when I see the download numbers and I see great shows that I can post. And Twitter blows up with compliments. So thank you. And thank you, guys. It's been great to be here. I've enjoyed it very much. I'm glad to be back someday.
I'm getting quite emotional listening to that.
Thank you, Scott.
I'm good at that.
Thank you very much, Scott.
I'm speechless. I don't really know how to follow up from that. Thank you very much for your kind words, sir. And I hopefully can speak for the other guys and just say we'll be here as long as you have us. It's still quite surreal to me anyway our new podcast drops on the wrestling feed and it's my voice that comes on when I press play. it's what you've built in the last 9 years is incredible. It's very strange. So thank you for having us.
The 10-year party is going to be fabulous.
I know. If the staff Christmas party is like anything, the 10-year party is going to be chaos.
Well, the budget's endless, so that might be a live show.
Yes, thank you very much, and please do continue to listen to everything that Scott has said there. Like endless hours of approximately 9 years worth of endless hours of content to listen to. And Ben, you're going back to listen to old stuff as well, so it's still just as good now as it was at the time.
I am currently listening to the In Your House Buried Alive. So that's where I'm back. So I think I made a comment the other day, didn't I? I'd only just heard the Jake Roberts' daughter impression for the first time. So anytime JT and Scott saw that, I'm gone. So on the train on Friday with my face mask on, like, you know, trying to laugh, and it's like I was getting some Benny odd looks.
Fuck you, Daddy.
Daddy. Why are you so mean to me, Daddy?
Oh, that's so great.
Oh, brilliant. So Ben and Rory, do you have anything you would like to plug?
I think Scott has already done all the plugs for me, mentioning seeing your video throughout this show from start to finish. Do watch out for episode 7, 6. I'm losing 7. Count already. Yes, that was better than I did. Yes, we have a brand new guest for you. Got a couple of new guests in the hopper for the next few months, actually, so do listen to that one. We say every show on the network in the home video classic section will eventually be done, and yes, Scott will be joining me, probably not for the Hacksaw Jim Duggan one though, I would say.
You still want your job?
Yes. Yeah, don't push it, McNamara. Yeah.
Okay. So first of all, I just want to say thank you to Scott. I know, let's get out of the way, just thank you so much for the opportunity, and to quote another great person from another great band, I hope we pass the audition. That's all I'll say on that.
Very good.
Excellent.
As for my plugs, okay, so I know the chaps recorded episode 6 of Highway to the Impact Zone last night. Episode 5 is already out there. So episode 6 will be covering TNA episode number 5 and pay-per-view number 102. They are a slog, I'll be honest. I'm not saying anything, I'm not saying to the other guys. I'm kind of doing that thing in The Simpsons where Bart's like Camp Krusty, he's doing his shaking. You know when he goes, Krusty is coming. Mine is Joe is coming. That's what I'm basically waiting for the summer of 05. So the Chicken Salad episode number 3 is out there. That was SummerSlam 93, which I will never understand why that was even on the list to begin with. We've done that. Episode 4 will be 4 Brawl 99. I've been lucky enough to do two things for the pop feed. First was Laughing Theatre with Andy. We watched Old School, where due to some technical issues, I didn't speak enough. There was a lot of long silences in there, and as you know, that's not me at all. But we got through. And then on the other live action watch I did with Matt, which on Piece of the Action, we watched Speed, and that had the opposite problem where me and Matt were speaking too much and we nearly missed Pop Quiz Hotshot, which is kind of like the big line from the film. We were like, oh yeah, this is happening, we better be quiet now. And as Scott said, obviously we formed PTB UK. In the next couple of months, we will be expanding to PTB Europe once Miranda gets here. So Telly and T will finally be on the air, all being well.
Oh, there we go. So a plentiful supply of Ben Locke coming your way very soon.
People will start to hate me. It's gonna be like Michael Cole overload. I'm just getting these visions.
I also love how you've got two shows, Ben. One of them is the whole gimmick is that you watch bad wrestling, and then you're on an Impact one where you're just so happy to be watching really bad wrestling.
I do the thing now where I have to watch something really good, because like I've obviously deliberately picked to watch. I've deliberately picked to watch really crap shows, so I've got to pick something really good to sort of mix it up.
Brilliant. So so plentiful Ben coming, plentiful Rory coming, and plentiful Scott as always.
Plentiful Callum too.
Well, yeah, so we've just recorded the last week. We recorded the last episode, or the next episode of Croc and Roll. We're going to look through the May of 1985 NWA Saturday night, or JCP Saturday night. We had Matt Souza on that one, as we said earlier on, and Sean has... the highlight of it is a great show, but Sean Kidd makes a Ric Flair comparison that really has to be heard to be believed. it is up there. Sean is known for his less than stellar takes, but this one is next level.
I was going to say, you just remind me of the chicken salad. The greatest impression this side of VKM is on that third episode. That is all I will say on the matter. Biased on that because it ate me doing it.
That is a very, that's a bold claim to make.
Yeah, it is.
But it is so, it is spot on when you actually hear it.
I look forward to hearing it. I've not heard it yet, but okay. I look forward to hearing that.
You'll know it when you do.
I'm sure I will. And one last thing from me is, if you haven't already been made aware, the PTB and YouTube has sort of had a relaunch. The intention was to fill the gap of sport that was missed over the years, but we're slowly and surely getting back to it. But it's still going to be a lot of fun to do. Recently, if you've listened to the main event, you would have heard part of it going through past versus present dream matches. There was a past versus present dream match dropped on there. One of the Godfather's picks, and when you know when the Godfather asks a request, gives you a request, you'd be stupid to turn it down. So who am I to ignore the Godfather and want to see one of his matches played out? So that was fun. So go and check that out. It's at place number 2B Nation on YouTube. So give us if you click the subscribe button, and I believe this is what they say from watching other YouTube, click the notification bell, I believe is the terminology from watching other ones.
Yes, it is.
So do that. We've also got a Twitch channel as well, so from time to time there'll be live streams of stuff. So that's at place. That's just Place to Be Nation on Twitch as well, if that's your thing. But certainly anything that goes on there, go on the YouTube as well. So if you give us a follow in there, that is as I said on one of the videos, the new place to be in your visual pop culture world. So just keeping it in line with the rest of the branding there. Keep the boss happy.
The way it's going, you are going to be like a visual, like a YouTube blogger, and what's the other phrase they use? I've just gone out of my head. But you're going to be one of those YouTube vloggers who's going to make it onto Strictly and I'm a Celebrity for being a YouTube vlogger and an influencer. That's the word I'm looking for.
Oh, I was thinking about that. I was thinking about that the other day. What the hell was an influencer? That's not a real job. I'm a social media influencer. No, you're a tax dodger. anyway, so the chances of maybe on Strictly Come Dancing are slim to minimal. But if I do get on Strictly Come Dancing, Ben, I'll make sure you're there to see it.
Front row, baby, front row.
Absolutely. You'll be sitting on what's her name, Shirley Test. Ballas's lap.
Oh, Shirley.
Oh, not Tess. No, she's a pain in the ass. this show's taking some tangents, and I didn't think Strictly Come Dancing was going to be one of them. Or Dancing with the Stars, as it is for our American friends. There you go, bringing it all back. So, if you're still with us, thank you very much for listening, Scott. Thank you very much for coming on once again. It has been an absolutely tremendous experience doing this with you, so and it won't be the last time. We'll make sure you get back on again, and that's not empty words. We'll do our best to try and get next SummerSlam, we'll get you back on again, because that might be one that's going to have a crowd and we can enjoy talking about it.
Yeah,
But from all of us, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.